Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, let's be honest. I have no real idea what day it is. I really have. I have entered geezerdom. I have. One good long weekend holiday just completely throws me sideways. But no, I think it's Tuesday. Because I think yesterday was Monday. Because all day Sunday I was pretty sure it was Saturday. And all day Saturday I wondered why I didn't have a show because I thought it was Friday. See how my mind works? Yeah. It is Tuesday. And it was a busy weekend. I hope it was a contemplative weekend for you as well. Memorial Day being something more than just a reason to throw some slabs on the smoker. Or steak or burgers or hot dogs or whatever on the grill. Memorial Day is a time of contemplation. It is a time of remembrance. And I hope that you did some of that. Here in the hills and hollers, some folks had a little harder time doing that than others might. I know of, I'm not going to tell tales out of school, so I'm not going to say who told it. But I heard over the weekend that a coal company truck had blocked the road to a certain cemetery in southern West Virginia to keep people from getting to it. They do that around here, coal companies. Kind of disgusting, really. But they really, really do that. Because it's, you know, screw the dead people. We got bad PR going on up there because you can see all the filth we're doing around here from it. Yeah, some people didn't pay so much attention. I heard of one Jeep just sort of going around and another fellow that wasn't anybody that the coal company functionary would want to have an argument with, just ignoring him. But, yeah, they do things like that around here. Coal companies try to stop people from going and visiting the last resting places of their loved ones, as they do on Memorial Day, what should be done on Memorial Day, and that is remember those who have sacrificed to make sure the present generation exists and that future ones yet may. But that's a coal company for you. Money, 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 money. God, I feel like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. How many... Finsta! How many times do I have to tell you not to play with the dirty money? But play with it they do, and dirty it is. Very, very dirty indeed. So there's two big breaking national stories. One being the nomination of Sonia Sotomayor, or as we'd pronounce her name here in the hills and hollers, Sonia Sotomayor. And the other being the California Supreme Court decision depriving a substantial portion of the population of the state of California of essential constitutional rights. Those are the big ones. But there's also news here in the hills and hollers. Like I said, it was a busy weekend. Very busy indeed. What do I mean? Well, I'm going to tell you. And we will get to, and we will cuss and discuss the national stories, the California story, the story of Sonia Sotomayor's nomination. You know it's going to be an ugly nomination fight. You knew that going in. Say anything you want to about us, but do not say that we don't have our eyes open. We know that we are dealing with right-wing monsters, and we know that because they are right-wing monsters, that they are ab initio and by definition hypocrites. They just are. So, you know, all of that. But it was, as I said, a particularly busy weekend. Saturday dawned with massive actions in the Coal River Valley, three of them at the same time. You would have to, you'll hear about them, because I'm going to tell you about them. It was, there was a stunning and graphic representation down in the Coal River Valley of exactly what people here face. 1,000 pairs of shoes were delivered to Massey's gate. 1,000 pairs of shoes. Why 1,000 pairs of shoes? Because the coal company itself acknowledges in its own reports that if their dirty, filthy, negligently designed, negligently maintained, entirely toxic sludge dam ever bursts, that at least 988 people will be killed instantaneously. Where do you go in your world that you see 988 people? Do we even see, unless we go to a sporting event or a play or the movies or something like that, do we even see 988 people in a day? I don't know. But 988 people would die almost instantaneously if one of Massey's sludge dams gave way. And I should probably not say if, but when. Because while I'm certainly not religious in this regard in any respect, one must acknowledge that these things are human contraptions, these piles of mud and rock that they call a dam. They are humanly engineered, and there is no fail-safe. There's no fallback position. If that thing goes, almost instantaneously, so do 988 human lives. Seriously, do this for me. This is just a little experiment. Think about all your neighbors. Look out the window if you have to, if you live in an urban area. How far would you have to go to count up 988 people? When Massey's sludge dam goes, that many people are dead. That many funerals. And that's just the beginning. It gets worse. We're talking about a tide
a tidal wave of sludge 26 feet high running down a narrow mountain valley. Can you conceive of it? Is the peak of your roof 26 feet high? Then if you were an almost American like those of us in Appalachia, your home would be underwater. No, it would not be underwater. Your home would be under toxic sludge. And there's every likelihood in the world that you would be too. And everything you care about, and everyone you love, and people you know, and people you don't know. Children sitting at their school desks would find themselves under at least 26 feet of toxic sludge. Now, I'm not being fair. They wouldn't really, the school kids at Marsh Fork Elementary, they wouldn't really be under the sludge. Those precious little children would be carried along by it. Their little bodies dragged over debris and rocks also, and tree limbs, entire trees also being ripped down the valley by that torrent from hell. There's a rather famous photo from the 500-year floods of 1985, I believe it was 1985, in northern West Virginia, of a bridge over the Cheat River, a couple of hundred feet up. And there's a cow stuck in it. It is, of course, a dead cow. But it serves as a stark reminder of the power of floodwaters. Now take that cow and make it a child. And put that child 50 feet up a mountain slope, speared, skewered, onto a tree, or drying out on a rock outcrop, the life gone from his or her body. We have listeners all over this country. More listeners outside of West Virginia than in it. And sometimes I think we need a graphic reminder of what it is, of what it means to be an Appalachian person. And what you live with, and what the risks are. There is a very, very real dot-to-dot connection between the likelihood of that dam or any of these dams. One of them's the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere. Hoover Dam? Pissant. One of them is the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere. And it holds back so many billion gallons of goo that it is scarcely comprehensible to the human mind. But that's okay. Because the people threatened by the goo, as you know by now, are only West Virginians. Only Appalachian people. Only children, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters, grandmothers, grandfathers. Ha! Hey, look! Granny's up on top of the church steeple! Reckon the goo got that high, huh? Dang. Well, thank God she ain't a real American.
just an Appalachian person who lives in a resource colony. If they had any sense, they wouldn't live there in the first place.
You understand, I mean, I'm being darkly humorous. But you understand that those conversations do and have taken place.
The entirety of Appalachia is nothing but one great big cost-benefit analysis balance sheet.
And every time they run that cost-benefit analysis, we lose. We lose. See, what went down this past Saturday was so very important because it brought all of this into stark relief. Like I said, three separate protests. Three separate protests, one of which involved the 1,000 pairs of shoes. You can read more about it from our good friend Jeff Biggers over at Huffington Post under the green tab. Look for Jeff Biggers' Raising the Dead Memorial. Raising the Dead, Memorial Day activists jailed in protest to stop 998 coal sludge deaths. As I said, there were nine people locked themselves to mining equipment on Patriot coal-owned mountaintop mountain removal operation on Kayford Mountain. And another group of brave souls, if I understand correctly, went out on the surface of one of these sludge seas and spread a 20 by 60 foot banner on the surface of Massey Energy's toxic brushy fork sludge sea. And it was at the Brushy Fork Dam where hundreds of pairs of shoes were delivered in stark reminder of what happens, not if, but when Massey's pile of mud gives way. Because they can't say, well, it ain't never happened. Why should we think it will? Because we got this little thing called Buffalo Creek. Ken Heckler, 94 years old, showed up and delivered a stirring speech. Funny, the cops refused to arrest him. God knows he tried! But they wouldn't. Mountain Justice Summer Camp volunteers and Christians for the Mountains. You want to talk about Christianity? There's some Christians. There are some followers of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. And MJS Camp volunteers and Christians for the Mountains get big, big praise for their flood relief volunteer help. See, most of that Mingo County flooding... Well, God just made it rain. Nah, The worst of it happened below mountain removal sites, but you know that. So what happened? Well, Gary Anderson lives on the mountain near the site. He said, "I fear for my friends and all the people living below this coal sludge dam, blasting beside the dam for over underground mines." Really, no kidding. They set off charges into that are buried in the earth that sit next to a sludge dam and over an absolute warren of old flooded coal mines. They do that. They get to do that. Where you live, if some company came along and said they wanted to do that, would they get to do that? If you live somewhere that's not Tennessee, Virginia, Kentucky, or West Virginia, could some company just come in and start blowing the snot out of New Hampshire? Would the people of Michigan tolerate that? How about you, Californians? Would that be tolerated there? I understand it's a rather painful day. Apparently, the Supreme Court of California can't even tolerate the thought of everyone in California having the same marriage rights. But really, if they were using 3 million pounds of high explosives per day on California, on your mountains, what would you do? Would it be tolerated? Would even Arnold tolerate that? It's not only tolerated here, it's encouraged.
It's good jobs.
The demonstration at the Marfork Mining Complex began with a prayer and a sermon. Bob Sage Russo, whom I know from Christians for the Mountains, referenced the Sermon on the Mount. You know, these right-wing, phony, fake followers of not exactly Christ. You know, they never get around to the Sermon on the Mount. They're all the time out there quoting Saul, Paul, whatever his name was. You know, the guy that got wasted huffing the hide-curing fumes from his tent business. They're all the time quoting him or Leviticus or 33rd Flip-Floppians or whatever, but they never get around to Jesus. Because their entire worldview and their entire way of existing is contrary to the teachings of Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. Sage stood forward, however, and made reference to the Sermon on the Mount. And he set forth a call for us all to be stewards of the earth and to bring forth with the works of our hands and the passing hours of our days jobs that are sustainable, jobs that are stable, and jobs that do not call upon workers to create partitioned selves that go forth in the day and do evil so that they can come home in the evening and pretend that they do not. When 7 billion gallons of toxic goo break forth from that dam, 998 people will be killed instantly, and the protesters had a banner appropriately labeled. A lot of love coming from passersby on Route 3. People honking, giving the thumbs up to the protesters. At one point in the process, 7 people approached the entrance to the dam facility, you know, the pile of mud. Police asked them to leave. They refused. They were arrested. This is where it gets interesting. Usually the actions have been what are referred to as catch and release. Sounds like trout fishing, doesn't it? Not this time. No, this time, and you don't know where the word came from, this time all seven were transported to the Southern Regional Jail outside Beckley. They were booked. They were arraigned. And the magistrate in question, who most certainly is a servant of Cole, set their bail at $2,000 cash only. No bail bondsman, no property bond, no personal recognizance. $2,000 cash only. Does that seem right? Is that a reasonable bail within the meaning of the Constitution of the United States? Or is that a magistrate doing the bidding of the coal industry? I don't know. It would be worth the research. Go and see which magistrate did it. Then go over the donor list of people who donated to his or her campaign and start finding the coal whores. And then you'll have your answer. Because, see, that's how the judicial system works in the resource colony of Appalachia, Greater Appalachia. Or should we say Lesser Appalachia? That's how it works. It works that way in the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia, and we're still awaiting the decision from the United States Supreme Court as to whether or not one may flagrantly buy a justice to the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia, as was done by the head of Massey Energy, one Don Blankenship. All of these protests were nonviolent. And yet these individuals were subjected to a $2,000 cash-only bond. Do you realize that in many instances in this state, a man who gets himself all good and drunk and then decides to beat the living hell out of the wife is not subjected to a cash-only bond? Drunk drivers? Not usually. Petty thieves? Thieves? Nah, no cash-only bond. But as of late Saturday, they still sat with the common criminals in the Southern Regional Jail of West Virginia on charges of trespass. And here's the ultimate irony.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Irony alert. Littering. No, really, littering. It's straight out of Arlo Guthrie. Littering. That's for the sign that they unfurled out on Massey's sea of toxic goo. Dig it. The toxic goo is not litter, but the sign was. I don't know how a colista's brain works, but when I think about that, it makes my little brain ache. How about yours? See, this has to happen. These protests must happen. Because America must come to grips with what it costs. You know, that third refrigerator, that fifth television, all those well-lighted empty rooms in homes and buildings all over the eastern United States and extending into the Midwest. America must come to grips with what those things cost. I'm just curious, because I haven't read anything about it. Is there a turn the lights out in the room when you leave policy in the White House? Because until such time as one of those things is enacted, it's a great big at us. With high summer coming, where will the thermostat be set? In the White House? In the offices of the Congressional House and Senate office buildings? In the administrative headquarters offices of various and sundry agencies? Where will that thermostat be set? If that thermostat is set at anything lower than 76 degrees, we really, really know what they think of us here in the resource colony. I'm sure George liked it nice and cool. I wouldn't be surprised if the White House thermostat was set at 60 in high summer and 90 in the winter. Because that was good for business. Can anybody find me find me that? Is there a White House policy? I don't know. Yeah, Cossack, you're right. The bail is reasonable if your reason is to ban the peons from having opinions. So, just something to get started with. There are many more topics this evening, but I did want you to know that people here... No, I was not there. I was not. But a lot of people were. And they walked that walk. And they talked that talk. And unless you've ever done that sort of thing, where you come to that moment of truth, where you know you are going to get arrested... Where you know that if you've never been arrested before, never so much as a speeding ticket, where you know that you are forever going to be stained with the brand of violator of the criminal law, you really don't know the heroism involved. It doesn't take any heroism to get in your truck and drive up on a moonscape and set off some dynamite all day long, or drive a dozer around and torment the hell out of the earth itself. That doesn't take any heroism. It takes real guts to stand up to the monsters, though. People from out of state were protesting. People from in-state. And the out-of-staters, I want to give an especial thank you to, because they get it. They understand that no matter how far you get from Appalachia, geographically or physically, you are right here. Every time you flip a switch. Every time. They are heroes. They are as brave as anyone I know. They weren't armed. They weren't cantankerous. They weren't hateful. They were just acting like real Americans. And for that, I hope they have your thanks, because they most assuredly have mine. Listen, like I said, other stuff is out there today. It's been a long weekend. A lot of stuff to talk about. Jump right in if you want to. You know the number. Excuse me. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll free. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck, You can dial 304-658-3333. I want to give a huge shout-out to the people who have stepped forward this month to make sure that there will be a June, possibly a July for the horn. It is a huge effort, and I tell you what, I see what has been done, and I know what the sacrifice is. Heroes can tell other heroes. From the heroism of their actions. There are heroes who step forward for communities in the Appalachians. There are heroes who step forward to make sure that there is a breathing, living alternative to the for-profit media structure that continues to toxify the public debate and dialogue and discourse in this country. And I am privileged to be associated with both. And it is an experience that makes me humble, but makes my steps, all of our steps at the horn, all of our efforts, makes them taken with a little bit more pride, a spring in our step, and a little more upward tilt to the chin. Thank you. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
I know one White House that did that, Jimmy Carter's.
Right, and then they reversed it all with Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. God, what we missed.
Ain't that the truth?
What we have missed. Woo. I don't know. I don't think they're listening to anybody. Of we the people about anything.
Go forward. I mean, expand on that, please.
Well, what I'm hearing about the medical coverage for everybody and all that, you know, is kind of, seems like they're listening more to the insurance companies and so forth and not listening to, like, doctors and all who know and nurses who know what it's all about and people like me that have been worked in insurance, you know. And I don't know a whole lot, but I know what I've experienced, and I didn't like it. But it's just like now, you know, we have to wait to get permission to go, and another doctor, you have to go to a certain doctor. You don't choose your doctors anymore. Like, you have a choice of two or three doctors, maybe, that you can go to on a regular basis, and then they have to approve for you to go somewhere else. I mean, that's just a small part of it. I'm just basically talking in general. I just get that feeling. It just makes me sick sometimes. But the thing that makes me the most sick is about the torture.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, it comes.
And it is. It's sickening.
It is. I just, last night I heard them, and it just made me sick to think that these people are going to get away with this. And the thing is, it came to me, you know, all that stuff they've got over in Ireland now about the kids who were tortured and tormented. They didn't have anybody, and they were just done anyway.
Yeah, they were you're referring to that Irish report. And it documents horrors upon horrors.
Oh, awful, horrible, horrible. I heard a woman.
Yeah, perpetrated against little children by Mother Church.
Yeah.
And the fun part of it is, there's no punishment. There's no accountability.
These were unworthy children. See, so they could be done anyway.
Well, oh, you mean like they weren't quite really human?
No, they didn't have anybody. And they were told that all the time, that they were nobody. They were nothing. But it just kind of came together to me that is so much alike, the torture thing, putting it under the, not lighting, not putting the light on it, you know. And don't they know that one little thing thing a Democrat might do. They're going to try their best to investigate. But not these people, not Bush and Cheney and all they did. And Cheney going around bragging about it. It's just sickening. But doesn't it kind of, you know, like the Catholic Church in this country too, you know, covered up the pedophilia and all. And, you know, the Bible ain't like that. The Bible tells about what all the people that were supposed to be God's people did.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of horror in there. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, there is. I mean, and, you know, and most of it be about the people that was, you know, God's people. So he don't hide nothing. And you can't, if you hide these things, it just corrupts and eats away. And it's been going on for so long, and you think maybe one day something will happen. And I think that's why they don't listen. I don't understand, you know, like nobody gives a hoot about y'all. Well, they don't either down here. You know, we've had flooding down here. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes.
People have lost their homes because flooding was so bad. And it's still raining. And I saw a little on the news today about there's 3,000 people were waiting. I believe it was in Daytona Beach to try to get help from the government. And Charlie Crist was coming down. And this was like in the afternoon when I saw it. And they'd been waiting and waiting. And it's because of our legislature. They're not wanting to let the money go. A bunch of Republicans.
Yeah. Well, if we give you the money, we won't have the money. And if we don't have the money,
we're like those little Irish kids.
Yeah.
They would do more to us the more chance they get. They'll treat us as bad or worse than them.
And come to you every 2 years or every 4 years and say, I love you, vote for me, because I got family values.
I'm sick of that.
Aren't you, though?
I am sick of it. I tell you, a long time ago, you know, when I was in the thing, you know, when I was under, I lost my parents, and I had relatives, but either they didn't want to help me or they couldn't help me, you know. And, you know, it's just nothing like your mother and daddy to go to. And I didn't have any brothers or sisters. And, of course, sometimes that doesn't make any difference either in some people. But I felt like that I didn't have a family. And it just dawned on me one day I did have a family. I had me and my son. And we were a family. And then they started all that nonsense about Dan Quayle talking about what was the show on TV?
Murphy Brown.
Yeah. And it just bothered me. I didn't know why it bothered me so badly, but it really did. And it was like they were saying, well, you don't count. You don't count. You don't have, you know, you're not a complete family.
No.
It dawned on me, you know, it just dawned on me. And anyway, just, you know, you never know what they just don't comprehend that we're real people.
No, the real people have real money, Juanita. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not trying to be a smart aleck or anything, but that's really that's the cutoff.
It absolutely is. And like they say, oh, well, y'all shouldn't have moved to the mountains. You shouldn't be living there. Well, a lot of people say that down here. We've got a lot of lowland where I live. Now, my daddy built up the land. So if it floods out here, which it has sometime, but if it floods, we'll be the last one to be flooded because he put it in on the property. And, but there's like about a block and a half from me, they're underwater half the time. And this, you know, we're still getting rain, and I don't know how many people, but it's so sad that these people, you know, are losing their homes. And people say, oh, well, they shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't be living there. Well, you could say that about anywhere, you know, because you don't know what kind of catastrophe is going to come your way.
Yeah, and pardon me, I'll build the time machine and go back and tell young Mr. Kincaid running from the blades
of the English that were aimed at his neck, that he really shouldn't have come here.
Yeah.
He should have just stayed in Scotland. Well, not in Scotland. He was a captive at the time. He should have just remained a good, a nice, well-behaved captive and gotten his nice, well-behaved head cut off. You know, it's funny how we talk about, well, Muslims, they cut people's heads off.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
in this country is related to somebody who cut people's heads off.
Oh, yeah. French, especially.
Well, I mean...
Oh, they did horrible things in England. I mean, England, the Anglos, I'm including all, you know, they were cannibals and everything else. And now some people are thinking that maybe that our ancestors ate the, what was the people that, the was it, we're Cro-Magnon, right?
Well... We're
what was the people that...
The Neanderthals, that we
Neanderthal,
ate them?
Neanderthal. They're thinking now that maybe we ate them.
Neanderthal under cave. Yum, yum.
Well, you know, well, they probably said, oh, well, they're not people. They're just animals. Let's have some of that. But anyway, I wanted to say something about... I don't know if you remember... Y'all were talking one time, you were talking about Mormons,
mm-hmm.
and I said something about Marie Osmond. I had seen her being interviewed, and she had moved to Hollywood. She said she didn't want to live in
right.
Utah anymore.
Right.
Well, I think I know why. Her daughter is a gay. Well, she's got a gay daughter.
Well, that would kind of want, yeah, you're not...
And she was talking about, she was being interviewed. I saw her. It's a slip. It's on Buzzflash. And somebody was interviewing her, and she said, and I love her. She's a good girl. She, you know, said, yes, she's gay. She said, I'm Mormon, you know, whatever. But I think maybe.
I don't think she's as Mormon as she may think she is.
I don't think, you know, I think something's given. Because, you know, she's on her second divorce.
Yeah, they don't look too kindly on that either.
No. But I bet you that's why. I bet you that's got a big reason for her about their daughter. She's proud of her. She's
well, see,
proud.
If you're a Mormon and you've got somebody related to you who's gay, you are, there's a lot of, you are not allowed to be proud of them.
Well, she is.
I mean, you're supposed to act like they're not even your own flesh and blood or anything anymore.
I know what you're saying. But, you know, it's funny how many of these ministers and all have children that are gay.
Sure.
And some of them accept them, and some of them are just like, well, they've made their bed, let them lie in it. They don't have nothing like that black preacher get wits or something.
Yeah.
His son is gay, and he's in trouble. And he said, "Well, he chose that life, you know." And I thought, well, you know, that's cold. I mean, my God, I would love my youngin no matter what. Even Ted Bundy's mother loved him.
Yeah, it may have not exactly got it right, but then again, maybe he just had a broken brain. You never know.
Oh, he had some kind of broken brain for sure. But she had to admit, you know, she finally had to admit that he was guilty. She couldn't believe it. But and she's actually friends of the mother whose daughter he killed, one of the girls he killed. She was reached out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway... I'd be proud of my young'un, I'll tell you, no matter what.
Yeah, you gotta be. You gotta be.
I might not like everything they do. I mean, I wouldn't like that at all. That'd be horrible. That would be horrible. But you know, when I said that about those different people looking like brothers,
mm-hmm.
It's something about them that looks perverted to me. That's what it was. It's perversion.
You know what? What you may be seeing is just the evil leaching out of their skin.
Well, I still think they're perverted, too. I think they love all that torture. I think they love it. Did you hear that Cheney's daughter said he was afraid about being prosecuted?
Oh, yeah, I did hear that. And that was as close to honest as any member of that family's been in a while.
And I thought.
But now they're saying, oh, she's going to run for office. She's going to run for office.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, yeah. She had her face stretched about as far back as it can be stretched.
Yeah.
Have all that money.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's one of those people that's had so many facelifts that when she raises her eyebrows, her pantyhose come up. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a joke.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's a real bad one.
But anyway, that's basically what I wanted to talk about. But just think about all these things. And
can't you just see Liz Cheney in office? Another generation
of
torturers, another generation of anti-constitutionalists?
Yeah. And, you know, like about the pledge that the soldiers and all take, it's supposed to defend the Constitution, aren't they? Isn't that the main part of the pledge?
Well, you're talking about the oath?
Yeah.
Protect and defend the Constitution? Uphold the Constitution? You know, there's several different oaths. Sometimes
yeah,
it's protect and defend. Sometimes it's uphold. Yeah.
But basically, that's the main thing. And you are supposed to, like, your commander-in-chief, but that's only if they follow the rule books, right?
Right. Well, it's that whole thing about legal versus illegal orders.
Yeah, they make them feel like, though, they have to obey everything. I'm kind of getting off the subject, but...
No, that's okay. There's no subject.
I know.
That's the whole point of conversation radio, one
of it. I know. My mind just works around and around. But I think yours does, too, so maybe...
my mind is like it's like a chihuahua that's gotten into somebody's coffee cup.
By the way, about those fines... ACLU would do anything about that.
The ACLU has been contacted, but I don't think they're in the bail business.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. It's like you said about somebody can be drunk or something, they're not going to have to pay. And what about these murderers that are supposed to go on trial and they get out on bail?
There you go.
This country's turned upside down.
Yeah, it is.
Or maybe every which way. But
well, just imagine it. There's some guy. I mean, you know, granted, you beat up the wife, you do get a restraining order against you, but they let you out and they don't make you post a cash only bail.
Right. But they're just doing that to get their way, just because they can. It's just like torture, just because they can do it. And what kind of example? What will we tell, Bob, what will we tell our children? Gee.
Yeah, I know. I remember the what will we tell the children debate during the Clinton hunt, the great Clinton zipper search.
I always remember the...
But I always figured and we told the children exactly what was going on. Bill Clinton...
They hear stuff at school.
Right, but back then we had a child that deserved an explanation, and we said, look, the President of the United States had a sexual affair like what you see on TV, and it's none of your business and none of my business and none of our business, but the Republicans think it's their business. So that's what we told the children.
Yeah.
And it wasn't painful at all. But you know what? I got to tell you, having dealt with that issue with a child and now dealing with torture with a child, I can tell you that explaining that their country tortures people for the fun of it is a little bit difficult to explain.
Yes, indeed it is. And don't you know that kids are going to try that water when they see all that pouring it? They're just going to try it.
Yeah, I can't wait until the next wave of telephone, video camera, YouTube abuse as the teenagers start waterboarding each other.
Yeah, it won't be just teenagers; it'll be little ones too. They, you know, there's a lot of kids that are just on their own. I'm sure it's that way everywhere, but down here, there's a lot of kids that are just you know, they don't have anybody. They're like those kids over in Ireland. And that's where we're all headed if something don't give. I get, but then I think, well, you know, at least we don't have that to listen to all the time. Gosh.
I know.
But it just does get frustrating, you know. That
But I do that, too. Every now and then I look around and I kind of go, well, we got a lot of problems, but George Bush is not one of them anymore.
Right.
And it just makes the air going into my lungs feel a little bit better.
Oh, me too. And I'm pleased with the woman that they nominated today.
I am too. Yeah. It seems like a rational choice, and I know she must be a good one because the right wing is already turning purple and having kittens with crocheted tails.
Yeah. Well, I guess they want to lose more voters.
I hope they do.
I hope they do. I do too.
Although this is a perfect place for me to throw in something.
Okay.
Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony, had a post the other day that he titled "Oy Caramba," not "I Caramba," but "Oy Caramba," pointing out because all of the for-profit media people are saying. And, of course, Sonia Sotomayor is the first Hispanic ever to sit on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true. It just goes to show you, you know, what a bunch of lazy sods the for-profit media are. The first Hispanic to ever sit on the United States Supreme Court was a man by the name of Benjamin Cardozo.
Oh.
His family had been in Portugal for about 8-9 generations before the Spanish ran them out. It was, you know, either leave or get burned alive, you know, back when that brand of Catholicism was all the rage. So they emigrated to the Netherlands where the Jewish population was tolerated. But see, Benjamin Cardozo doesn't get to be Hispanic because he's Jewish, which is just crazy. I can never keep my Ashkenazis separate from my Sephardics, but whichever one is Eastern European, Benjamin Cardozo's family, in terms of its Jewishness, was not. They absolutely...
Doesn't sound like a Jewish name.
Cardozo? No, it's a Hispanic name.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like, yeah.
And so he was the first Hispanic on the court. But you see, that's the way it is with the for-profit media. They have to have some simplistic American Idol sort of hook.
Well, I saw a press conference today with somebody from the State Department, and to me, they were asking him these most stupid questions about Korea. Well, like, you know, North Korea. It was like, you wanted to talk to them, you know, now what do you think? And this and that, I mean, just went on and on. I finally turned it. And the guy said, I can't talk to you about a lot of those things. And they were asking him like he could tell them what the guy was thinking.
Oh, you know, North Korea set off a bottle rocket today.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody, they're going to come get us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for God's sakes, it's North Korea. I mean, granted, they got a million man army or some such, but the million man army can march about 15 feet before it dies of starvation.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they have more food than anybody, so there's nobody going to take their place. Comparing, you know, the other people, that they've got nothing.
I mean, I'm not making light of the North Koreans, but, no. You know, I generally assume, well, it's like Saddam Hussein. Okay.
Yeah. Bluff.
Well, that. But the Bush War One. You know, back when Poppy Bush.
Oh yeah.
The son of the Hitler backer. Mm-hmm. Was president, and they sent that telex to the State Department. Iraq did. They asked our permission to invade Kuwait. You know, this isn't some liberal talking point. These are facts.
Yeah, they were getting their oil under the
because of the, yeah, there was slant drilling or some such.
Yeah.
And the Bush State Department wrote back and said, the United States takes no position on Arab-Arab conflicts.
And do you remember when they had that girl?
That's when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. People don't just, countries generally don't just invade one another unless there's like, you know, thousand-year-old ethnic tensions kind of, you know. And those you sort of see coming.
Yeah.
But acting like North Korea is just going to, you know, have, I don't know, get hold of a
now
bowl
they're
of...
they're going to be able to shoot missiles. Man.
Yeah, the what's his name? Kim Jong-il? Is that it? Acting like he's just going to go absolutely sprayed roach crazy after a bowl of bad kimchi and just light up South Korea. You know, he knows what would happen to him. I mean, China is his neighbor, and China doesn't like him.
Well, they were asking even about some kind of quake in Japan. Was that caused by that? You know, and the guy said, I don't know.
I'm sure there were several people in Japan who had bad hair days today that the North Koreans caused.
Yeah.
You know, this is just... And you know, it's back...
But they were asking the most stupid question, men and women.
Really. Oh, you know, back when George Bush named them part of the tricycle of evil or... It's all an attempt to... You understand, of course. I mean, I'm not telling you anything, Juanita.
Yeah.
But it is an attempt to gin up a constant bogeyman. Anybody who's ever read or heard Mike Malloy read 1984 knows this.
I heard him read part of it. I didn't get to hear all of it.
I heard the better part of it. It was quite cool.
Yeah.
It was excellent. But you see what I mean. But, you know, heaven forbid we should actually talk sanely about that. It's like the crazy talk I still hear about Iran. Oh, they're threatening Israel.
Yeah.
How?
Oh, I recall that.
I mean, they got no nukes. Israel has over 200 of them. Who's the threat to whom?
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to know, just asking.
Well, I did hear a little talk today about the...
Because, I mean, Israel's being run by an absolutely... I mean, this guy's crazy.
Netanyahu?
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah, but...
I mean, he's nuts.
I heard him say that he didn't get what he wanted out of Obama. But, you know, because said he's been so assured...
Well, he's, you know,
before.
Israel spent 8 years dropping its pants and having and having George Bush bury his nose brown deep.
Yeah.
And if we don't do that, oh, well, you know, you're not loving Israel right.
But I remember when he was, I don't know if he was still the prime minister or, you know, before. And he was talking, I heard him talking on C-SPAN a while back, and the man he admired in American he admired the most was Newt Gingrich. And I thought, okay, I get you. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, exactly. Newt Gingrich, great American. there's not enough liquor in Fayette County to get me to say that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, because anytime you're defining a great American as a man who serves divorce papers on his cancer-stricken wife in her hospital bed, marries the second woman, cheats on her with a congressional intern, and then divorces her to marry the intern, anytime you define greatness that way, I'm saying you've pretty much got a squirrely...
You know, if you listen to him talk, he don't make sense. I mean, he's another double-talker, liar.
Exactly. Juanita, wonderful hearing from you this evening.
Okay, you too, and take care, and I hope things will get better.
Oh, it's getting better all the time. Take care, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our VIEW correspondent calling from Central Florida. That is Juanita, and let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Oh, God. Hey, listen, so I'm really happy to hear that... Obama picked somebody, you know, of color. I kind of fell over when that happened.
Yeah.
I was really surprised. Isn't it horrible for me to say? But I was sitting there thinking, you know what? If this person, if this black man can't pick somebody of color for this seat, I'm going to lose it. You know, at least do that.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, he's probably going to get another appointment
And not to just keep raising the bar or anything.
He needs to pick another person of color.
Yeah.
I mean, no.
Please, I want the Supreme Court to look like America.
No, I'm done with it. I'm like, you know what? You're in that position. Please, you know, you shouldn't go to the racism conference because they may bring up the specter of reparation. Screw that whole line you hear about Israel. No, it's reparations up in here is what they didn't want to deal with at that Geneva conference.
Yeah. Yeah, because the Israel thing was a dummied up, staged, ginned up, faked up.
That's just a straw man. I mean, I was reading some article about it. And it's like, yeah, that is the issue that Obama is loath to even deal with because of his face. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Too much. But nevertheless.
Well, I mean, look, let's see. White folks gave us Dred Scott. White folks gave us Plessy versus Ferguson. White folks gave us every bad decision. White men gave us every bad decision we ever had and every worst decision we ever had from the Supreme Court up until a white woman gave us Bush v. Gore.
Oh, no, it's nonstop. And it's like the indignity that this woman who's been picked is going to have to put up with because she's a woman and she's not white. It's just disgusting, you know. It's like, I'm so sick of this idea that if they pick a white man, then there's no questions about his qualifications. But if it's someone of color or a female.
Oh, yeah, and you're exactly on point, Sandra, because the right wing's already out there saying, well, you know, she's unqualified. She wouldn't be here if she wasn't a woman. But she is she's an honors graduate. She's summa cum laude from Princeton and editor of the Yale Law Review, okay?
It is just outrageous, this assumption that just because it's white men, then there's a built-in objectivity. They've had centuries of advantages. Give me a break.
Nobody was out, you know, the funny thing is, and this might be that thing that you and I kind of object to so much, but there may be an element of truth to it here. This may be the Obama won Kenobi mind trick thing. Because, see, she's got the same academic creds as Sammy Alito.
Yeah, exactly. No,
Princeton, Yale.
No, but she had the nerve to suggest that she can, her opinion and her way of behaving as a judge is informed by, wait for it, being a woman and being a person of color. And she's being attacked for that already. It's like, are you freaking kidding me? How else is she going to judge a situation if not from her own experience?
Well, see, but that's because white folks walk around just not thinking about being white folks. The world's just our oyster.
It's just absurd. You think that Roberts, his whole world is informed by his corporatist mentality. No one says anything about it except for people like you and me. But that's a reference place where he's making decisions from. But that's okay.
Oh, sure. And you know, that argument's already. I've seen where some Republican said, well, you know, we're not going to make the nomination of Ms. Sotomayor, Judge Sotomayor. We're not going to make that as difficult as the Democrats did poor John Roberts.
Oh, no, I don't. You know what I want to hear? I want to hear, oh, we just, you know, up and down vote. This is what I remember that. That's all we heard day and night, right?
Yeah.
And if the Democrats had a dare to try to hold up that, it was going to be the nuclear option and the president should be able to pick his own on and on and on. So I can't wait to hear how they're going to try to. In fact, I don't think they're going to be able to stop this one. I think this is a pretty good pick on his part, I have to say.
Well, if they stop it, they will. If they stop it, they know at least one thing. They stop this nomination, and I hate to reduce these things to some sort of petty political calculus, Sandra, but this country runs on two things, hydrocarbons and pettiness. And the fact of the matter is, if they put up too much of a fight about this, the one hope that they have had would be to that the GOP has had was to get the Hispanic vote, and they will kiss that goodbye.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. I think that this one is a bit difficult because if you look at the criticisms are so weak. They don't even make no sense, what I've heard so far. And I don't think there's a large enough base to resonate anymore. I mean, they're so decimated, the Republicans. But we have to deal with what we look at, which is weak-ass Democrats. That's my concern. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, and Tucker Carlson, the little geek who apparently found a real necktie, has already called her a racist.
Well, yeah, he, you know, coming from that mealy mouth, overprivileged prick, you know, he's tired. I don't. Who listens to him?
I didn't know he was still on TV.
I don't even care. I mean, he is really about as useless. I'm more concerned about, you know, the party that's in charge, i.e. I'm still in this state of shock that President Obama is looking to Congress to help legalize some sort of preventative detention. Hello. What the hell? No, I mean, I know you probably reviewed that already because it's been a few days, but I am distraught by that.
What drives me crazy out of that, Sandra, is this discussion about whether or not our prisons are mean enough to put...
No, it's I know that is absurdity of it.
Yeah, are our prisons cruel enough to put Osama's cabbie in?
No, listen, we got the Unabomber and 2.2 million other people locked up in the hell holes that are American prisons. So that argument is just, it's like laughable, considering this is the most prison locking up people ass country in the world, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We have 1%.
We have 5% of the population, and we lock up 25% of the world's prisoners. That's huge, man. That's huge.
Yeah, and of our total population, we've officially, I think it was a year and a half or so ago, we officially passed that benchmark where we've got 1% of the entire United States population in the stir. And if you just sit and chew on that number for a couple of minutes, you go, what?
Well, no, but think about this. If there's 30 million, there's a million black people out of that 2.2 million that are in prison, too.
Yeah.
They make up 13%. I mean, that's like 10%. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. What you're looking at is old Reconstruction policy, frankly.
Oh. No, I mean, that's straight up kind of, I was reading this one writer, Roland, who's writing about inverted totalitarianism, and he talked about, it's no accident that the huge number of blacks who are locked up, because that population has been the most politicized and radicalized in this country, and you can make that sort of connection that's the group that's locked up.
Yeah, the thing is, there's a word for it, Sandra. Warehoused.
Well,
they are warehoused.
Yeah, and it's also another word for it is poverty.
Sure it is. But, you know, if we start talking about something like, examining poverty's relationship to the commission of crime, well, then the right wing's going to get all up. You know how they are.
Well, no,
and I'm just happy that they're marginalizing themselves. But the thing is, while they're marginalized and they're still nothing but they're reduced to nothing but the old Confederacy, Sandra. At the end of the day, they're the old Confederacy with the entire corporate media structure behind them. It's like giving Jefferson Davis a satellite a satellite uplink.
No, I mean, I have to look at this this person from Virginia who's taken on the industrial prison complex at Webb. You know, jaw-dropping that type of person is taking them on, but you know it kind of made to attack him. I'm not too sure why he's decided to take on the whole prison thing, but it's kind of interesting.
And this, you know, this poor little pitiful town in Montana that is starving to death, saying, "Well, we got a prison, bring them here. We'll be real mean to them, we promise." Because everything's been taken away from them and been replaced with the prison industrial complex. I mean,
I mean, so much of that goes back to what you were saying before, the Reconstruction, or I should say antebellum, because these people who go to prison are also counted as population, but they're not represented, sort of that two-thirds type of people. I mean, it's still going on, you know?
Well, you know, when we talk about this, you know, we had a conversation, I guess, last week about dehumanizing the other. And there's this this creep on Fox, Fox News Channel. And this is the quote. That's Ferg making a racket. He says, Guantanamo detainees, and this is the quote, aren't human anymore. They're monsters, and monsters deserve to die.
I mean, after a while, it just starts to be absurd.
Shouldn't Fox just put a little Confederate flag up in the corner?
Oh yeah, they should have that waving. You know how
the animated bottom. Right, yeah.
Right, no, that's for definite. But anyway, still though, for Obama to use his considerable oratory skills to come up with that, calling people who agree with the law absolutists, I felt ill. I'll be honest with you. I was like, you know what? You're not fooling a whole bunch of people out here. I'm like, no, fool. I'm on the side of following the damn law. I'm not an absolutist. You know what I mean? What the hell was that?
Well, what? I mean, see, but they use these words, Sandra. What the hell is an absolutist?
Well, no, but it's absurd that he's trying to find a middle ground between torturing and not torturing. This is the thing. It's like, are you kidding? What? You know?
Well, that's because there isn't any. Well, there's we torture and we don't.
No, and it's legal and we're going to be a torture state. There is no trying to massage each side to get a middle ground on every freaking issue he comes across. I'm about so sick of that.
You mean that sort of the six of one, half dozen of another approach?
Oh God, but no, not with this though. It's sort of, and for him to accuse the people who want him to follow the law as being absolutist is really insulting. I was just like, oh my God. So now you're going to enlist weak ass Congress to okay some sort of way you can hold people without charging them? This is what it all sounds like to me.
And see, what's sad is there is there's a court decision out there fairly recently. This is an AP story from a week or so ago. A federal judge says the United States can continue to hold some prisoners at Guantanamo Bay indefinitely without any charges. U.S. You know, and see, I don't know what's happening in these people's heads. Like U.S. District Judge John Bates's opinion a week ago limited the Obama administration's definition of who can be held. But he said Congress in the days after September 11, 2001, gave the president the authority to hold anyone involved in planning, aiding, or carrying out the terrorist attacks. And it's the case turns on several Guantanamo concentration camp prisoners, because it is a concentration camp, you know, who are challenging their detention. ACLU attorney Jonathan Haffetz said the opinion flouts the Constitution's prohibition against indefinite detention without charge. Now, that's an activist judge. Constitution says one thing. He says another. See, because it's in the judicial system, that means that Congress will get involved and the Obama administration will too. And yeah, I'm as sick as you are at this idea that we can find some sort of ground that we can say, well, we're going to torture a little bit, or we're going to unconstitutionally detain some.
Oh no, you know, like administrative detention. I mean, all of it just smacks of, you know, Israel, they do this sort of stuff. Those are terror states, torture states, and this is what they're trying to institutionalize here in some little extra small circumstances. But people are so stupid. This is the state, dude. You give the state any kind of look-see on these issues, we're done for, man. And I don't, if I sound like an alarmist, oh well, so be it. I think this is just unbelievable, and people are so uneducated that they seem to think that there is parameters to do this. Once this happens, it's just it's a wide open box, and all we need now is some smooth-talking, edumacated Negro to bring it to fruition. You know, I'm about sick with this.
For real.
And this is what I hollered about for 8 years of the Bush administration, five of them on the air.
Yeah, you did.
You know, and I used to ask, I said, you know, when stuff like this was being considered in the Congress, and the right winger, well, we got to have a national security. We got to be secure. We got to protect the people shopping at the Walmart. And I just wanted to just pull one of them aside and say, hey, buddy, are you going to feel the same way if you're saying it about President Hillary Clinton? Because Obama wasn't in it at the time. Because, you know, they are so, well, hypocritical. And I can't get it. I don't know. I can't get my mind into where their minds are, that they live in this constant state of terror that I can't comprehend. And they would imprison the whole world if they thought it was necessary to and this is what it boils down to. It has nothing to do with national security. It is the protection of their political hides, because they don't want somebody coming up out of the grassroots saying, hey, that bomb went off over to the shopping safe, and it wouldn't have went off if he hadn't have voted against that terrorism bill.
No, and they're counting on the sheer timidity and stupidity of, you know, your ordinary citizen to just think, oh, yeah, whatever you need to do to protect us and demonize that group, we don't care. And they think it's not going to seep. They don't understand the capacity of the state to do harm. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
This is my thing. I'm just coming at it from a straight...
Well, frankly, you sound more constitutionalist than most of the people on the right wing who are, and I'm not accusing you of that, but your argument makes sense, whereas the right wing's out there buying up all the ammo because the government's going to get our guns.
Well, right, that's the disconnect. It's like you can get that excised about something like that, but you can't make the same connections with the state being able to hold anyone. I don't care who.
But see, it's not the anyone part they think about, Sandra. It's some scary brown people.
No, I know.
Race,
I know.
You know, because I mean, really, if you dig, and this is just my personal theory, if you shave away the layers of most obscene and obnoxious American governmental policy, at the bottom of it, you will find this undercurrent of racism, and this is that. You know, when they write these bills, when they talk about these laws, they're not talking about locking up any white folks. They're talking about locking up the bad element. You know, Jesus, this is all William Bennett and the abortion comment from a few years back.
Oh yeah, no, you're right about that. I mean, if you look at these over the top drug laws, and there's always a brown or black face at the heart of it. You're so right about that, because they never apply that to their daughters and the little lily white other family members. You're right. It's the super predators. Remember that BS?
Super.
You know, what I'm saying? Yeah, you're dead on with that one, but I am so sick of everything being so reducible to that, to the point where they will just roll over and turn. You don't ever want to give the state. No. I do my thing. I'm like, Obama, Hillary, I don't care. You letting him get away with not only not prosecuting these freaks, but instituting some sort of legal detention just for thinking about crime type of. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's all out of, you know, a bad Tom Cruise movie.
It really is quite disturbing. And, you know, to read the pundits, oh, yeah, trying to rationalize it, and the Obama supporters, oh, well, you know, Jedi mind, he really going to, you know, I'm so sick of what he's really thinking. No, he is really doing what you don't want him to do.
He is really, you know, this isn't the Quaker Third Way.
You know what? That's a good one. Shit, I gotta get a T-shirt anyway.
that's like the best T-shirt I've seen lately was on a lady who was fighting against the methyl isocyanate stockpile at Institute West Virginia. Black T-shirt, white letters, just said, "I am not an acceptable loss."
Mm, yeah. Good night.
And see that's you know, that's the Constitution is not an acceptable loss. And that's what we're talking about here. I mean, this Bates ruling, this federal district judge, you know, did you not read the daggum thing? It's not that long. And, you know, to say, I guess he can warehouse anybody he wants to.
No, I mean, but the implications are just, you know, it's just sort of mind-numbing. But I don't really know. I don't know why I have to stop myself when I get so worked up, because why am I in such a state about it? Because the blood-drenched history, you know, why should I be surprised?
I know, but the thing is, there's a future element to this too, Sandra. One of these days, we're going to go one step too far. We're already on an economic downward slide, and it's been going on. You know, let's not kid ourselves. It's been going on since 1970 or so.
Oh,
and
you get the prize, yeah.
And one of these days, the rest of that's why there was a project for a new American century. You know. Because we got to figure out a way to keep the rest of the world down. Because the rest of the world's developing. You can't hide. You can't flaunt your televisions and your cars and your swimming pools to the rest of the world without them sooner or later wanting it.
Mm.
And so there is a date in the future where the rest of the world may look at us and say, you know, we're not going to put up with this. Now it may not be. We may be talking about 50, 100, 150, 200 years from now. But this kind of stuff will eventually get us squashed like a bug. And I'm enough of a weirdo, Sandra, that I actually think 200 years down the road.
Well, and not, yeah, exactly. I mean, but I think, unfortunately for us, I think, you know, we're looking at the next 40 years, you know, being some real, hegemonic decline, big time, because the financial it's just such a disaster. I can't even begin.
And the thing is, we're not even gonna handle it as well as the United Kingdom did.
Well, no. See, that's unfortunate. The good thing about the Kingdom is that they had their Commonwealth and the U.S. assuming the hegemonic role, which was acceptable to them, you know. But it ain't going to go down like that for us. I'm sorry. I think that, we deindustrialized and did so many things so wrong economically. It's just really all coming home to roost.
And I don't know.
In a really unfortunate way, because this unemployment, I just think that's going
to
be.
And there we are, Sandra, with a way to reindustrialize in a sustainable manner staring us in the face. But our elected representatives can't see past the money. You know, money's not transparent, so even if that sustainable economy is standing at the edge of your nose, as long as you get all that money piled up in front of you, you don't know it. You know, and not to run back to the issue, but I am still just stunned. I'm just stunned that there's $10 billion for carbon capture and storage in the Markey, Waxman Markey climate bill. Holy mackerel! What are they thinking? $10 billion. $10 billion would pay every mountain remover in Appalachia the same wage that they're getting now, and they could start trying to undo what they've done.
Yeah, I mean, I always heard that a part of this was to basically pay industries to desist, to stop. You know what I mean? You're sort of not increased. I know I saw that in that bill, and I just thought, oh, my God, you know? What lobbyist wrote that bill?
The American Clean Coal Energy Coalition, the ECC. It sounds like somebody eating their lunch. They're the Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. That's who wrote that bill.
I thought that clean coal was just a misnomer. That it does that technology isn't.
It doesn't exist.
Like Iran getting a nuclear. I thought it didn't exist yet.
It doesn't, and it won't. See, that's
that's
the thing that's just, pardon me, batshit about this, is that. even the big polluters like Shell, you know, great big Royal Dutch Shell, you know, they say, oh, no, we can't deploy any of this stuff till 2050 at the tops, even if it works then.
No, but isn't this, I'm sorry to get back to this, but isn't this whole bill just another way for them to financialize yet another sector?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
yes,
God.
It is.
So, you know, so it's just another, something else for them to try to turn into a bubble, right?
Yes. And see, the thing is, this is $10 billion. Dollars. Bleh. This is $10 billion. That ain't going to do nothing. It's the worst kind of corporate welfare. I mean, it might fund some research at Carnegie Mellon or maybe Caltech or MIT or, you know, I don't know, Bell Labs or something. But at the end of the day, it doesn't do anything.
But it's just more research for the extractive industries, though, right?
Sure.
Right. I mean, it's not like it's... yeah, no, I mean, I haven't really got deep into that bill. I just was reading bits and pieces here, and it just sounds like it's another giveaway to the wrong interest again, the extractive interest more than renewable.
And that's the thing. Again, you know, it's that $10 billion. You know, how many solar panel factories would $10 billion? Finance. How many windmill, wind turbine factories? How many little factories that make the specialized nut and the specialized bolt that, you know, hold some portion of something together? You know, these are processes that go from macro all the way down to micro.
Yeah. No. Wow. I don't even know what to say.
Well, I didn't mean to take you off down the garden path on that. But the problem, what I'm trying to point at, Sandra, is the fact that every good idea we have gets perverted.
Yeah.
Whether it's you know, let's green the economy, and all of a sudden West Virginia is dotted with billboards saying that coal is carbon neutral, or whether it's let's don't torture anymore, and we engage in a debate about How much torture is it before it's violating the idea of we don't torture? Or we're not going to imprison people without a damn good reason for doing it. At the same time, we're having a debate asking how little reason constitutes damn good.
And we get to have, you know, this sort of framed with Cheney representing some sort of side, which I'm still just sort of...
Somebody send that man a side of fat back. I mean, or you know, go nuke your popcorn next to him or something. It's ridiculous that, I mean, when has this happened in the history of the United States? You know, if Jimmy Carter so much as said, hello, my name's Jimmy Carter, Hannity would be out there on the television calling for him to be drawn and quartered because, you know, former presidents aren't supposed to do that kind of thing.
Oh, of course. I mean, but the thing is, but like you said, this sort of toxic media is quite happy to give him endless hours to make torture a policy debate. I'm just sort of like, good Lord.
And again, you ache, don't you? You ache, Sandra, for Barack Obama just to come out and say, I hate to break it to Mr. Cheney. He's Mr. Cheney right now. He's not Vice President Cheney anymore. He's Mr. Cheney. I hate to break it to Mr. Cheney, but he's unemployed, and nothing he says matters. He's irrelevant. Goodbye, Mr. Cheney.
It would, wouldn't it be?
I mean, would you... Even jaded us, Sandra, we would stand up and cheer like we were sitting in the theater at the end of some sort of feel-good movie.
Yeah.
You know, when E.T. gets home or something. Yes, he did it. He understands. I mean, it would be the miracle worker with the water spilling over Helen's hand and Annie Sullivan going, water, Helen, it has a name. When any Democrat finally just stood up and said, you know, my little mantra since November for the Republican Party, five words, sit down and shut up.
No, exactly. But
sorry, I didn't mean
happening.
To do that to you.
That is not what's happening.
No, it's not, because, you know, we're going to, and it's not just Obama, it's Harry Reid.
Oh, he makes me sick. sick.
And see, that's the thing that makes the Sotomayor nomination such a how can I explain this? Okay, you're an NFL fan. I'm a college football fan. For 20 years, the West Virginia Mountaineers were coached by a man named Don Nealon, okay? If there were 5 minutes to go in the football game and the Mountaineers were up by 50, you were still on the edge of your seat because you knew that if anybody on planet Earth could snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, Don Nealon was the man who could. There was this old gag that went around West Virginia. What do Don Nealon and Billy Graham have in common? They can both make 100,000 people stand up and scream Jesus Christ.
That's about where I'm starting to feel about the Democrats.
Right, exactly. That's Harry Reid. This Sonia Sotomayor nomination should be a no-brainer.
Yeah, and it should be. All he has to do is say, sit the hell down. You got your nominations. Now it's time for our president to get his. And that should be the end of it. We won the election, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That should be discussion over. But no, he will find some way to turn this into some sort of tragicomedy. I mark my words, you know?
Oh, I already know he will. And he doesn't have the stones to look at the chinless Mitch and say, you know what? All we want is an up or down vote.
Exactly. You know, Bill Frist, that was all that came out of his mouth for a while there. You know?
Yeah. All we want is an up or down vote.
Listen, so one.
Yeah, it was like Senate Majority Leader Forrest Gump. Although that's being kind of cruel to Forrest Gump.
Yeah, but you know.
But you get my point, Sandra. It's going to be a damn drama.
No, and it shouldn't be. Like you said, I mean, like I said, she may get through, but it's not going to be. You know, it should just be over with. It should be like today he announced who it was. Boom, goes to committee. But we have that horrible. Is it Jeff Sessions who's the ranking member of Judiciary now?
Yes, he is, and that gives. I can't tell you what a case of the creeps that gives me.
Right. Yeah, no, we know what his background is. He's a racist. And so,
oh, bad. I mean, not just a little bit. I mean, he's like Strom Thurmond racist. He's like Lester Maddox racist.
Just straight up. And it's like, the thing is, though, can't they lock up people within the committee before they even get out? Isn't there like...
Rules? Yeah, they can. They can kill it.
Right. So what I'm saying is that, and because it's so weak... Who knows what's going to... I mean, is that Leahy still the chairman of it?
Yes.
Anyway, I'm not going to, like, write it off. I'm assuming that there's enough momentum, like you say, with the Hispanic vote and all the other interests at play that they won't be able to sort of stop because it's historic, you know? So maybe that'll carry the day.
Well, and I'm hoping that petty political consideration, you know, where Sessions sits down with Coburn, who sits down with, Senator Cornyn, and the rest of them, fellers, we all know what's going on here, and no, she ain't white, and no, she ain't male, but we ain't going to get elected to nothing no more if we lose. I mean, we're running out of people to piss off, fellers. And that's the only thing that stands between a complete miscarriage of justice and something approaching a rational approach. I mean, Jesus, you've got Willard Romney. I mean, just to go over a couple of things already, Willard Romney is out there saying that she's a disturbing choice.
Oh, please, you know what?
The nomination of Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court is troubling. Her public statements make it clear that she has an expansive view of the role of the judiciary. See, and again, I don't want to keep you too long or anything, Sandra, but let's go back to that statement I made about, you know, sort of like, you know, like archaeologists do, scraping away a couple of centimeters of dirt at a time, you know, till you get down to where the bodies are buried. This is that. When you see this line, she has an expansive view of the role of the judiciary.
Right,
you know what he's
saying?
That means that she might afford more rights to more Americans.
Right, or she might view, include more people.
And the thing is, these creeps never say this where they can be challenged on it. He said, historically, the court is where judges interpret the Constitution and apply the law. Really? Really, Willard? Is that what they were doing in Dred Scott? Is that what they were doing in Plessy? Is that really?
Or the Lochner court that?
Yeah, Lochner. Right. Or the Schenck-Froh-Work and Debs decisions. Is that what was going on there?
You know, the Baker's 13 away. All those horrible Darwinistic decisions that sort of. I can't even.
You know, 20 years of telling working people that they had no rights because they were preserving privity of contract.
Right. Yes, that whole. You know, most people don't even realize that we had that whole lock. That was so awful, that whole period. I was just reading about it, and I thought, are you kidding me with this?
It was a judicial dark ages.
It was horrible.
I mean, granted, it's never been an easy relationship. You've got Andrew Jackson all the way. Yeah, great American. So glad he's on the money. That's, you know, if you're Cherokee, every $20. If I was Cherokee, I'd never own a $20 bill. But
yeah, no, he was a horror show for Native people. That's for damn sure.
I forget which case it was, but Justice Marshall issued some sort of restraining order or something against him, and Andrew Jackson responded by saying, "Well, Justice Marshall has made his order. Now let him try to enforce it."
Exactly. No. You ain't lying on that, no. A lot of those, and that just goes to show, these judges, expansive. How much more expansive can you get for that, you know, those contract business, or that Lochner stuff? That was real crazy.
Well, see, the thing, what makes me absolutely nuts on this, and I was going to mention a little bit ago when we were talking about Harry Reid letting this turn into a drama, you and me, we don't necessarily have a problem. We may not have a problem with the likes of Jeff Sessions. It may not get that far. Okay, because we've got this creepy little bastard named Ben Nelson from Nebraska who calls himself a Democrat, but, you know, ain't. Of course, he shows up on Fox News Sunday. Where else? And he says, talking about the nomination, this is, you know, 2 days ago before it was announced, but he says, I think that's the test. Will they be an activist or not? And I would hope that there wouldn't be any circumstances that would be so extreme with any of the president's nominees that the other side would feel the need to filibuster it, or that I might feel the need to filibuster in the case of extraordinary circumstances.
Oh, no. And you know, it just makes you feel sick listening to that pig.
Well, this is one of the guys that formed that gang of 14 that bent America over for John Roberts and Sam Alito.
No, exactly. I mean, those people aren't activists, but any woman, minority, anybody like that is inherently active. That's what all this is saying.
I mean, he's setting it up to do that.
Yeah, no, I really don't even know what to think about that.
You know, this is one of those don't touch that dial kind of moments because, you know, let's see, we've got the House, we've got the Senate, we've got the executive branch. We got a bunch of governors. It's 3 minutes to go in the game, and we're up 49-0, and we might lose.
Oh well, and speaking of judges, all of a sudden it's okay that 18,000 gay people can stay married, but no one else can.
I mean, talk about your 3/5 human.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, am I really sitting here looking at a yet? America doing another group, making them second class. Am I really seeing this again?
Yeah, you really are. And the language is truly horrifying.
It's hideous. I'm like, you guys, you know, oh, God, it just made me sick looking at it, thinking, wait a minute, what the hell is this?
Listen to this. Just listen to this and see if you can keep from running screaming around the room, Sandra.
We further conclude that Proposition 8 does not apply retroactively, and therefore that the marriages of same-sex couples performed prior to the effective date of Proposition 8 remain valid. Chief Justice Ronald George wrote the opinion, and
who was the one dissenting like Plessy? What did they say? I didn't read that.
I haven't gotten the whole opinion yet. But I can't wait to. I mean, yeah, you know what it's going to be.
Well, no, you know what I'm saying, because that descent from Plessy was hella prescient and played out beautifully, just as the person wrote it. I can't remember the justice. So I'm curious, when I saw it was a 6-1, I said, oh, shit, we really are going back in history on this one.
Yeah, I mean, how do you, I mean, I don't understand, you know, because this stupid Wire story about it says, opponents of Proposition 8 didn't really have much hope because the court didn't have much by way of precedent to go on. Huh? What? Didn't have much in the way of precedent? How about Loving v. Virginia?
Oh, God. No, it's out. I mean, it's outrageous, but I was telling my friend, I said, you know, don't hold your breath on this being overturned, and just, I didn't know it would be like this. I didn't even try to split it some weird-ass way, but I knew it would be upheld, you know?
Well, it's time to get creative in California, Sandra.
Listen, I am just...
And it's time to give them what they want. And frankly, you know, I said something very mean-spiritedly, and you know what? I'm back to it. I'm endorsing this as my personal view. It doesn't have to be anybody else's. But I believe that every gay person and every ally of gay people in California have the right now, according to this decision, to look at an individual and say, how did you vote on Prop 8? And when they say, I voted for it, say, I refuse to serve you.
Well, you know, I think...
Doctors, lawyers, barbers, dentists, architects, landscapers, people who work in retail. I'm sorry, you voted yes on 8. I can't serve you.
Not only that, but I also think that, you know, gay people maybe not deal with taxes. I mean, because what are you getting? I mean, you know, you're being discriminated against, and they're taking all and more of your tax dollars because you can't get married. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, is there a little weasel room in here because of this business about and by the way, I don't know that everybody else does, but I know you do. The California court is dominated by Republican appointees.
Well,
this is what you get.
Yeah. No, this is the thing, but. You know, one word to gays, though, I might add, is that if they want to agitate, they need to reach out to these communities of color. Because from my vantage point, you know, the gay issue is, I don't even know how to describe it. It's, they isolate themselves with these marriage and whatever other little ones they got. They don't tie it together with some of the other issues that people of color are dealing with. So they're kind of missing out on that action.
Yeah, well, let's
they're
see.
They're missing out.
I'm looking here. There was some language. Who is, and I'm reading this on the fly, who is Moreno? Is that a judge on the court?
I'm not too sure. No, you know what? Yeah, I have to feign ignorance on the whole makeup. I know it's, like you said, really.
I'm Evelyn Wood speed reading for all I'm worth right now, Sandra.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's Arnold. Let's see. Supporters of the proposition argued that the Californians long have had the right to change their state constitution through ballot initiatives. The effort to overturn the restriction, quote, strikes directly at the heart of California's system of government. A brief by the Conservative Family Research Council argued. California Attorney General Jerry Brown sided with the advocates of same-sex marriage, stating in court papers that Proposition 8 put the fundamental rights of a minority group to a popular vote. Here it is, yeah. And in his dissenting opinion, Justice Carlos Moreno wrote that the measure, and this will be the language, I mean, this is going to be the pull quote for, you know, when the other six are historically reduced to ciphers. The measure, quote, violates the essence of the Equal Protection Clause of the California Constitution and fundamentally alters its scope and meaning. The majority's holding is not just a defeat for same-sex couples, but for any minority group that seeks the protection of the Equal Protection Clause of the California Constitution.
Well, that just sounds like the I don't know, is that begging for a look on the federal level, or am I wrong?
Well, no, the reference is to the Equal Protection Clause of the California Constitution.
And the California Constitution used to be even more expansive than the federal,
right.
Which is why they had the agitation for marriage in the first place. And it's been totally turned on gays, viciously.
And now there is a loophole that's going to have to yet be addressed, because by virtue of the actions of other states, you know, Vermont, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Iowa, because of that, the question remains open in California as to whether people married there, whether their marriages will be recognized as valid in California. So that's going to have to be litigated, too.
Well, because they're recognizing 18,000 of their own state members. Yeah, no, I can see that. That's what I mean. It's really murky, and it's so weird that they just couldn't just go ahead and throw it out. I don't know.
It's disheartening, to say the least. Well, but by the same token, it's going to call for some creative action in California. You know, the fact of the matter is, I'm enough of a smart aleck to say that there should be a you know, you guys get to have fun with ballot initiatives, and I would, you know, I don't know if maybe it's already out there, but this thing should be dragged through the streets until it. There needs to be a California, and I'm not being a smartass about this, Sandra. I mean, I am one, but this is not one where I am being in deadly earnest. There needs to be a ballot initiative preserving marriage in California by outlawing all forms of divorce.
Well, yeah, exactly. No, that's what I'm saying. The next step for these freaks is to sort of outlaw people living together. You know, put that in the Constitution. I mean, you can go so many different ways with this. It's scary.
It is.
You know, who's next? You know, I mean, these people think that they're just trying to stop.
Yeah, let's see. How about no Korean African marriages? How about no? But see, all of that's so plainly violative of Loving versus Virginia. And yet, maybe this is something to think about. This doesn't just ban gay marriage. Okay, or marriage equity, as it's now being called in the fight. This bans a marriage between a person who is Korean and a person who is black. This bans that marriage too, because if they're gay, they can't. So they're being double discriminated against. They're being discriminated against because they're gay, but also secondarily, they are being prevented from getting married under what is a clear violation of Loving versus Virginia.
No, but then you have this weird small group of 18,000. I mean, what no man's land is that? I mean, that's really odd to me too.
It is bizarre. It's incomprehensible.
Yeah. So anyway, I suppose I should let you go. It's just one other thing I wanted to mention to you is that did you know that over the next 3 years, 19% of all companies are going to cut their health benefits to workers.
Dear God.
So I just thought I'd leave you with that because I was kind of a bit shocked and horrified.
Yeah, that's breathtaking.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, have a good evening.
All right, take it easy, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. And rolling along, let's see if Cassie is still with us. Hey, Cassie.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm well. How about you?
Pretty good. Actually, I wrote down all the stuff I wanted to talk to you about. The first thing that I wanted to ask you about was part of what Sandra was talking about,
mm-hmm.
about prisons. And you guys were talking about how, you know, what percentage of the country's in prison and what percentage of, you know, people of color and stuff. When I tell people that my mom is in jail, they, like, don't believe it because she's a white woman, and what they don't get is that even, like, white people can go to jail, but that for a lot of people, it's more about addiction and poverty than it is about what color they are.
I think there's a profound element of truth in that. The question, however, becomes one of how we address the poverty issue, Cassie, and to what degree race has a presence in that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Do you understand that?
Yes.
We treat the poor generally in this country like crap, but we treat some elements of the poor in this country crappier than we treat others.
Yeah.
But without
we also don't provide enough drug treatment and don't provide enough psychology.
No, and there was some hope in that Obama administration announcement, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that said we're going to start treating America's drug issue not as a war, but as a treatment and rehab issue. And that must have just terrified the daylights out of the entire DEA establishment. But the other thing, in reference to what you just brought up, the other thing is that it's scrape away the layers and you'll find the racism thing. Right-wingers and so-called conservatives love to complain about the whale fire, or food stamps, or aid to families with dependent children, or WIC, or the LIHEAP program that provides low-income heating assistance.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And they always do it, and always have done it, with the implication that the person, the poster child, if you will, for all of that, is always a black woman. So that we have created an impression in this country that black folks are the folks who are on welfare, when in fact the statistics are the exact opposite. A huge majority of welfare recipients in this country are poor and white.
Right.
But we don't talk about it. We don't. And I'm sure some of the response that you get has to do with who you are, Cassie, because you are intelligent, you are well spoken, you present yourself nicely, and consequently, well, how could a nice little girl like that have a mama in prison?
Right. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you are actually one of the reasons that I do approve of the Sonia Sotomayor, and I'm sure there will be things for me to have misgivings about. I'm sure there's some "gee, I love corporations" decision out there waiting to just shock the eyeballs out of my head. But one of the reasons I do approve of her nomination is she came up poor. I don't mean she was underprivileged. I mean poor. All right?
She was in housing projects, right?
Yes. She's a Bronx girl.
If you look at her background, and forget which city it is, but if you look at her background and the colleges and the law school and starting out poor and all of that, doesn't she remind you of Michelle Obama?
Yes.
Didn't she go to some of the same schools even?
Princeton and Yale.
Didn't they? Yeah. Is that the same too? I know Princeton is where Michelle Obama went.
Yes. That's an interesting observation. There's no way to sort of test it or anything. She was kind of the person that everybody was looking to. She was the default. I don't mean default in a bad way, but she was the natural person to fill that slot. Hispanic background, Puerto Rican, female, young-ish, flying spaghetti monster willing, she'll live to be 100, and the first day on the, assuming she gets confirmed and Harry Reid doesn't suddenly just collapse like a rag doll with its sawdust let loose, assuming she's confirmed. I live in a snarky, mean little world, and I would love to see her walk up to Antonin Scalia and go, I'm going to your funeral.
Now, why is it that the right wing thinks that it's okay to have last names that are Italian, but it's not okay to have last names that are Spanish?
Because they're the Italians. If it was the other way around, you're well read. You've read The Sneetches by Dr. Seuss, right, Cassie?
No.
Okay, you owe yourself The Sneetches. You are not too. I am 46 years old. I am not too old for the Sneetches. You are not too old for the Sneetches. Go read the Sneetches.
Okay.
Because, see, if it was the if the shoe was on the other foot, and all the right-wing conservative Republicans had Hispanic names, it wouldn't be okay to have an Italian one.
Okay.
You got to remember that guy who was ran for president for a little bit, real creepy guy from Colorado, named Tom Tancredo.
Yeah.
Tancredo. His grandparents came over on the boat. And he was the shining conservative face of anti-immigration policy. This is the degree to which their hypocrisy is just, it's reached like supernova proportions.
Okay. So, on their hypocrisy. Well, you know that Petraeus came out on the weekend and said that he is against torture now and he wants us to close Gitmo. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so are all of the Republicans going to say that he's turning, like, left-wing crazy? Or are they going to, like, how do you think that's going to play out?
Well, it looks right now, Cassie, like it's going to play out as sort of as Sandra described it, where we try to find some twisted alternative universe where some torture is more acceptable than other torture. And I tell you what, you know, that way lieth madness.
Well, okay. If we go there, I hope this doesn't happen, but I know a bunch of teenagers, especially guys, like I can't see girls doing this, but I know a bunch of guys who would like try the waterboarding thing because their parents are saying that there's nothing wrong with it. Do you think that, because I heard you say something about that kids and teenagers would start doing
Yeah, it'll be the latest cell phone YouTube phenomenon.
But do you think it'll all be right-wing kids?
I gotta hope so.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sitting here looking at Ferg, and he knows if I ever catch him playing, you know, Let's Waterboard Doodle, that there won't even be a greasy spot left to him. But, you know, I mean, that's hyperbole, of course. Liberal, decent, upright, good American parents, I would assume, have already explained this to their kids. On the other hand, you know, it's the ones that sit around, mom and dad, you know, got the Fox Channel going, look at that. All we did was put some panties on their head and get them wet, and they say it's torture. Well,
did you hear that the latest thing in the right wing now is to say that since the talk show hosts are getting waterboard, the radio hosts and stuff, since they're willing to do it, it must not be so bad.
Well, that's a ridiculous piece of non-logic.
but they're saying it.
That's their job. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there's one way to respond to all this. Every one of them. Look at them and say, if it's not torture, we'll do it to you.
Right. That's what they need to say to Liz Cheney.
That's what they need to say to Dick Cheney. And say, we will do it to you while there's a microwave making popcorn next to you, Dick. You still think it's not torture?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. Okay. That's Ferg in the background. Yeah. He's still learning not to talk when Dad's got the mic open. I mean, I'm being serious here. If it's not torture, let's do it to you. But, you know, you haven't seen Rush Limbaugh come out and say, my friends, I'll let them waterboard me.
Right. And Sean Hannity was supposed to.
Right, because they're scared of it. They know it is torture. But because they are racists, and because they are conservative, and because they are everything that they are, It's good enough for somebody over there that is the other, that has a different skin color, speaks a different language, has a different culture, a different religion. It's okay to do it to them, because at the end of the day, for the Hannitys and the Savages and the Becks and the Limbaughs of the world, the people it's being done to aren't really human.
Right. Right. And that's what we talked about last week.
Right.
Okay, last question. And this, I know there was a difference, but I don't know what the difference is. The preventative detention thing, that's the one that in England they said that you can only do it for 20-something days, and then you have to, like, have a charge, right? But Obama wants to do it forever. That's preventative detention, right?
Yes.
Okay, so...
We're going to hold you until we're sure you're not a threat anymore, and the only way we're going to know you're not a threat anymore is when you're dead.
Okay, so don't we hold people for conspiracy where they're planning to do a crime, but they don't actually do it?
Yeah.
And that's okay, and that you can prove in a court, but preventive detention, what's the difference? And I don't mean it like snark. I don't understand.
Well, no, I mean, you can play what's the difference with, what's the difference between preventive detention and a North Vietnamese re-education camp? That was preventive detention, too. The Japanese internment camps in World War II were preventive detention. Okay, Andersonville, the most heinous... the most vile, awful, nightmarish war crime of the Civil War, Andersonville, was preventive detention. Because they held, you know, the South knew that they were outnumbered by the North, and therefore held northern prisoners at Andersonville and just let them starve to death and die of disease, rather than sending them back north where they could re-enter the ranks.
But that's different from conspiracy.
How?
That's not, because it's not based on the individual. It's based on the group.
Which isn't based on the group?
Like, if somebody is in jail for conspiracy, then it's an individual person that was planning an individual crime. Right? Or a group of people.
You couldn't say, look, you know, a Japanese shopkeeper was rounded up and put in an internment camp in World War II, not because he was thought to have any particular information or any particular contacts, but because he was Japanese.
Right.
The people at Andersonville in the Civil War...
Detention is more like that.
Look, you know the story of the Uyghurs, right? You know who the Uyghurs are. They're being held in preventive detention. We captured them. We kidnapped them. We tortured them. We have warehoused them at the Guantanamo concentration camp. We acknowledge that they are guilty of precisely nothing. But now we say that we're holding them in preventive detention because their lives would be at risk if we sent them back home.
So why don't we find somewhere else?
Well, but you know, you've entered a sort of, and I'm not arguing with you. You've entered a sort of moral quagmire here, though, Cassie, because we ruined their lives.
So we should try and make everything right. If we can. We should try and.
But how is, you know, if
we
they come
ask them what they want?
If they come from a warm climate, how is sending them to a cold climate? You know, what if good liberal Sweden says we'll take them? Their lives are still wrecked because their wives and their children are still back in China.
And why can't they go back to China?
Because we say that the Chinese would persecute and kill them. Because they are part of a...
Would they?
I don't know.
Okay.
Apparently they haven't persecuted and killed their wives and children.
Well, why not ask them what they want and their families?
That's entirely too rational. I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but it's just too rational.
But, okay, even with the Uyghurs, we already have them. Is what Obama approved keeping people we already have or putting people in jail who are new?
I think it's both, isn't it?
I don't know. I haven't read enough.
It seems to me to be both.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking about, and see, this is all, as Sandra noted, this is all wrapped up in that whole bizarreness of the question of, you know, where, you know, can America, you know, I was so ashamed of the Democrats when they pulled that funding, not over the idea of permanently warehousing people in prisons who might not be guilty of anything, but because, well, we're not sure if America's jails are secure.
I hate that. That's an insult to everybody.
Yes, it is.
It's like, that's an insult to the people that haven't been convicted of a crime. That's an insult to the people that run the prisons. That's an insult to the prisoners. That's an insult to everybody. And to the American people who can't tell the difference between somebody who's convicted of a crime and somebody who's just called a terrorist.
Yes. I mean, I think you really... you really got a handle on what it's beyond an embarrassment. It's an American tragedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you believe in anything...
We're not going to apologize for it or anything.
If you believe in anything like karma or such like, this can't end well.
No. It's already not ending well. And it's not over.
I know. Where does it end, Cassie? I mean, I'm not being sarcastic. Where does it end?
It ends when someone has got to stand up and tell the American people what's really going on. And someone has the guts to put it on TV or to put it on a website, and the American people get it. That's where it ends. Because once the American people get it.
Okay, well, I know what your situation is, and I don't necessarily want to make it public. I've got an idea that there's one way that the American people will get it, maybe, and it's only a maybe.
What's that?
If everything we're doing to other people gets done to one of ours.
Well, you know that...
Because then...
My brother, I mean, I haven't talked in the air, but my brother's over in Afghanistan.
I know, and that's why I hesitated to say it.
I'm kind of hoping that nothing happens to him.
Oh, you're really hoping, and I know.
Yeah, okay, I'm really hoping nothing happens to him.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
On the other hand, and you and I see this really differently, but my brother joined the Army to go to mechanic school for free. And he joined as a mechanic, and he's a truck mechanic, and he's never built a bomb, and he's never shot a gun at a person, and all he does is fix diesel engines and play with helicopters. Mostly diesel engines on trucks.
Mm-hmm.
But he's wearing the uniform and he's over there. So, you know, he's got America right there on his sleeve, literally, with the flag. And, you know, to anyone else who doesn't know what he does or who he is, he's just, you know, one of the Americans. Just like we see all of them as them and not, you know, this guy who herds sheep and this guy who, you know, sells shish kebabs and this guy who you know, whatever, six Afghanistan trucks. We
right.
see them as them, and they see us as them.
Right, and you wind up in that situation where an eye for an eye and the whole world goes blind.
Yeah.
It is,
You know, and even that thing that you were quoting before where we told Saddam Hussein that he could invade the other country, even that, we said Arabs, Arabs. Like, we can't tell the difference. Like, even the State Department can't, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, what it is, you know, we don't care what you do to each other as long as you don't hurt Israel. I mean, that's really what that policy boils down to. Yeah. We do not take, you know, that's what was sent back to Saddam Hussein. The United States does not take a position on Arab-Arab conflicts.
Okay.
We don't care if you all slaughter each other down to the last man, as long as you don't hurt any Israelis. That's the truth. I mean, I don't like talking about it. I don't like the reality of it. But it is reality.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that.
Well, it's all very complicated, and I admit it, and it's painful.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay. In school, we're learning about Vietnam. And we're learning about sort of what, I don't think a whole lot of it is 100% accurate, but anyway, part of what we're talking about is, like, what are the lessons that we are supposed to know from this, from, you know, from losing in Vietnam, or saying we won, or whatever it is that we did, but, I'm in high school.
Right.
And we're learning about this. Why is it that the Congress and Barack Obama didn't learn the lessons from Vietnam and what happens when we stay in wars that we don't belong in?
There's a couple of different approaches to that, Cassie. One is that Barack Obama did learn the lesson.
Then why is he sending, well, I guess he's sending more of the troops to Afghanistan, but he's not.
Because he's, the answer is because he's president of the United States now, and he has obligations to the American military industrial complex as much or more than he has to the fighting, to the military or the military families in this country.
And does he cry on Memorial Day when he sees all of the names of all of the people who died in Iraq?
That I can't. No one can answer that but him.
Because now, I mean, it was Bush's fault. But every day that we don't move towards leaving, you know, and maybe we are moving towards leaving, and it's just they're not announcing it. You know, they're not announcing it. Maybe we are moving towards leaving, but every day that we don't move towards leaving, it's now Obama's fault. For the people who die from now on.
Exactly. That's what I said Friday night. Like it or no, this is now Mr. Obama's war. They are both his war. They weren't started by him,
right.
But if he does not end
right.
them...
And even the Iraqi people and the Afghan people who die or who are hurt or who have nightmares for the next 20 years or any of it, it's all on him. If it happened after... I won't say after he took office, but let's say after the summer.
Yeah.
We're still there, and he's not moving us towards leaving.
Well, the question is...
But it's everybody's lives, and it's the lives and not just the death.
Right. Right. And you know, there are questions that happen.
They don't talk about that. They don't talk about...
Well, the for-profit media does everything in their power not to talk about Afghanistan at all, Cassie.
Right. One of the people that I know from my blogging, and I read her blog and she reads my blog, is a high school senior in Iraq. And she writes about sort of her classes, and, I mean, there's no schools, and she and her friends take the bus to different teachers' houses, and, you know, they just study for the exams that they have to do at the end of the year, and it's, you know, it's like, it's crazy, and half the time the class is canceled because the bus can't go any further because the street is bombed or whatever. Like, it's really, really crazy. It's like nothing like me going to school. But some of the stuff that she and her friends have seen, and her friends' parents, well, she has friends whose parents have died and stuff, it's like they're going to have nightmares about this, and this is going to affect them forever. And we're responsible for that, too. And these kids are all alive. All of the kids she blogs about, they're all alive. And we're still, like, that doesn't, when we talk about casualties, we don't even talk about casualties among Iraqi school kids or Iraqis at all. But mm-hmm. We certainly don't talk about people.
Cassie, we don't even talk about an honest. We don't even talk about an honest number. You know, it was, no. I think it was Halloween 2004 when the Johns Hopkins study came out that said as many as a million Iraqi civilians had been killed up to that date. Okay? October 31st, 2004. I remember it very well because I had this whole cute Halloween show planned. And I couldn't do it because that study had hit the same day. And I begged people, think about what that means. We have killed a million civilians in Iraq. We have killed one-sixth of the Holocaust in Iraq. God only knows what the number is here as we sit in May of 2009.
I was 13 then. I turned 13 the next day. That's a long time ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you account for that? But then again, you know, how do we account for the 3, 4, 5 million Vietnamese civilians that we killed? How do, what kind, and the most offensive part of it, Cassie, is that we use words like acceptable losses and collateral damage. How can you talk about another human being that way? That's worse than cussing them.
It's because the people who make up words like collateral damage don't see them as human beings. I mean, collateral damage sounds like the broken window.
Yeah, right. You know, it's an oopsie. It's a do-over. My bad. It's a tennis ball over the fence. You know, acceptable losses are the number of baseballs in a given major league game that are going to be hit into the stands as fouls or home runs. Those are acceptable losses. Human beings are not acceptable losses. There's no such thing as an acceptable loss. That's like there's no such thing as torture that isn't torture, or detention that isn't detention.
If to Republicans, only white American people are the people that count.
And that's true.
How come they're not even honest about how many troops have died?
Well, because they've got to protect the sort of psychological cushion that they've built for themselves. We couldn't do that. We're America. We're good. You know, Ferg and I were outside on, what was it, Saturday? Yeah, it was Saturday. Doing some stuff around the house. And somebody had their stereo up blasting Lee Greenwood singing, "And I'm proud to be an American."
Do people even know, though, what he stands for?
No. What? Which?
Because nobody tells them.
Right.
Because the media is stupid.
And you just get, "I'm just proud to be American. I'm just proud." And you don't even have to know the history. And you don't even have to know the culture. You know, I'm proud to know that you own a copy of the People's History of the United States. We've talked about that in the past. So, you know, you've got some working idea of what the real history of this country is.
And you got upset with me when I was picking and choosing chapters.
Yes. We start at the beginning, we read to the end.
Well, except that I had to start where I was at school.
Right. But books are not cafeterias, and you don't
now
get to...
I'm going to go back now. I'll go back in summer, and I'll read the rest of the book.
But right, because it's not a cafeteria, and you can't just glide past the Brussels sprouts.
At 11th grade, start after the Brussels
sprouts.
The Brussels sprouts were in 8th grade, and I didn't have the book yet.
Right. I understand that, but okay. but there is history out there. You know, people don't know it. I mean, we are talking about an American culture that is functionally illiterate of its own history.
Well, the kids
and that makes people
learn a lot less of the U.S. history than we do. They learn a lot less, and that's been true every year.
So we're getting more and more history. Well, I guess at some point we just won't have any history at all. It'll all be, America don't have no history. We're just good people. Ain't never done nothing wrong.
Actually, our book is kind of like that.
You're kidding. Of course you're not, but...
Not completely, but yeah. Not completely like that, but there is... It never shows America as wrong. It shows certain policies that didn't work out.
Oh, you mean like the Trail of Tears just didn't work out? I'm not picking on you, but I mean, that's how it's described? An unfortunate moment in American history?
Described as an event and not a genocide or a plan to kill people. It's sort of like if you were to walk a class across the street, but you forgot to check if it's a highway that doesn't have any stop signs. But it was, you know, just the class walking across the street. And they were trying to get to the park. It was a good thing.
Oh, my. I wish you were kidding, but I know you're not.
I'm going to send you pages.
Do. That's just an unfortunate incident.
Yep.
Darn the luck.
Yep. Anyway, I have to go.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to eat up all your minutes.
No, it's okay.
All right. We'll talk soon, Cassie.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. I never cease to get my eyes opened a little bit more when I talk to Cassie. Let's see if anybody's still here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Next up when you talk to me.
Hey, what's up, Reverbo?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure.
Did it to you again, didn't
I? I have that much to talk about tonight. I've just been enjoying your show so much. I think this is one of the best programs you've had, and it's all been caller driven for the most part. I mean, I've just been sitting here those two, I thought had some of the most insightful and poignant commentary I've heard in a while. I've just been sitting here listening.
It's amazing. It's amazing what can happen.
I thought I had some topics, but I don't know.
Well, I'm sure we can open a couple of doors. Our buddy Marty out in California opining in said, if Rush Limbaugh tried to allow himself to be waterboarded, I'd feel sorry for the waterboard. I don't think it would last. Got a bunch of starving comedians in America, but I got the funniest audience in the world.
Oh, man. Have you taken a look? See any pictures of Limbaugh lately? That guy is just... scary.
Oh, I saw the video of him renouncing his leadership in his titular leadership of the Republican Party. He's going to morph into Jabba the Hutt real soon.
Oh yeah, either that or
And maybe they can get Ann Coulter to do the little sort of Danish, two cheese Danish on the side of the head braids, the Princess Leia, and just sit at his feet like that.
God, that would be awesome. I'm gonna even get more obscure here, but I know you're gonna picture this guy in your mind. In Doctor Strangelove, which we constantly refer to.
Yes.
Do you remember the Russian ambassador?
Oh, absolutely.
Limbaugh is starting to look like him.
One of my greatest little drop lines ever. The fools. The mad fools.
Oh, yeah, he's the one Turgeson said. He's going to see everything. He's going to see the big board.
Care for a cigar, Mr. Ambassador?
No, I do not smoke the products of imperialist stooges.
Only commie stooges. Yeah, that guy.
That movie's a documentary. It's not fiction.
It is. You know, I mean, there's so many great lines. Now see here, Colonel Batguano, if that really is your name. This is an emergency, and I must use the telephone, and I must have change from that Coca-Cola machine. Shoot the lock off. That is an order.
All right. Keenan Wynn is Colonel Batguano, you know? All right. I'll do it. But if you're not who you say you are, you're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola Corporation.
It's just nonstop. Yeah, it's it's the genius of Terry Southern. That's what that movie is all about. Obviously, you have to give Peter Sellers his due and Stanley Kubrick their due, but and all of them and Slim Pickens. I mean, you just put down the line.
Yeah, because I use another one of those. I'm going to make this work if I have to hairlip everybody on Bear Creek.
There you go. He's going down the whole. That emergency kit, if they got a ditch, he's going into everything they got in there. The $100 in gold, $100, $400 in Russian rubles. They got prophylactics. They got little miniature Bibles.
Now, one miniature Russian translation phrase book and Holy Bible.
And Holy Bible, yeah. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Two pairs of nylon stockings. Fella could have a pretty damn good time in Vegas on this.
I'm telling you, it's Terry Southern. When the world lost the genius when they lost him. I mean, he did Easy Rider. He did Candy. He did Dr. Strangelove. And I think he was a man of the possum.
Oh, how could you not be?
Yeah, with that kind of insight. I don't even know where to begin here.
What you've touched on, though, Reverbo, is my ongoing theme that the right wing has taken some of the most beloved, over the last 8 years, took some of the most beloved pieces of cinema and books, and rather than understanding that they were satire, or sarcasm, or parody, or comedy, or dark humor, they thought they were textbooks and documentaries. The two that come immediately rushing to mind are Dr. Strangelove and one of my favorite books on Earth, Catch 22.
Sure.
Because Catch 22, you know, the insanity of the Bush administration and the insanity of what goes on bureaucracy wise in Catch 22 are the same darn thing. I mean, the great loyalty. I don't know if you've read it, but the great loyalty oath campaign, where everybody had to, you know, if you were going through the chow line, you had to say the Pledge of Allegiance and sign a loyalty oath to get in the door. You had to say the Pledge of Allegiance and sign a loyalty oath to get a tray. You had to sign a loyalty oath and say the Pledge of Allegiance to get silverware, to get potato, you know, all the way through.
And it was referring to delay in the K Street loyalty.
Well, there you go. You know, Milo Minderbinder and M&M Industries, everybody's got a share, and everybody gets what's good for M&M Industries is good for the country.
Does that remind anyone of Halliburton at all?
Or even Blackwater. You know, because there is that passage in Catch 22 where Milo orders the Germans to bomb the Pianosa airfield.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because the price was too good, and he just couldn't pass it up. You know, he climbs the tree to sit up there with Yosari and says, taste this. What is this? It's chocolate-covered cotton. No, I will not taste this, Milo. Just a little bit. It's indigestible, Milo. Yeah, but I got a great... I didn't know that the bottom was going to go out of the cotton market in Cairo, so I got all this cotton I can't unload. Can't we get the men to eat it?
Yeah, but it is.
You know, and you fast forward 50 short years,
yeah. And
you've got Halliburton running cafeterias in Iraq where the Pentagon itself, on its own audits, said that rotten meat at the tune of $30 per soldier per day was being served to our servicemen and women.
Hey, it was too good of a deal to pass up.
Can't we make the salt? Can't we make them eat it? And there was no Yossarian to say, no, Milo, we can't. It's indigestible.
Well, and unfortunately, now we're not going to go back. We got plenty of Milos suddenly coming out of the woodwork, and none of them have the strength to go back and start getting all the tar and feathers ready. It's just, yeah, God. I would love to take these torturers. I would love to take all these just filthy bastards. And I would love to just ask them this great line that I saw on the internet. You know, take these, by the way, the word that I think we need to be using more of is sanctimonious.
That's a dandy good word.
That is a dandy good word. And I would like to just take all these sanctimonious a-holes. And I would just to ask them, you know, if you can, I don't know, if they can do this, and they can, evidently, they can reconcile their Christian values somehow with terrorism and bigotry and blowing people up and torturing people. We haven't even gotten to the Muslims yet. I'm just talking about the Christians. And I just want to ask them, have you forgotten about Jesus? Isn't it time you did?
Oh, that's good.
I wish I'd have come up with that line.
That's better. That's better than when they look at me and ask me if I've found God, and I ask them, did you lose him again?
Same basic idea. But I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear Jesus' name anymore. Anything has to do with misery and torture.
Well, assuming that there's any reality to the magic that's beyond, but behind the whole religious flummery, I'm daring to speak for him, which, with the lightning bolt, but I don't think he wants to hear his name anymore spoken by those people.
I wouldn't think so. I would not think so.
I mean, it's a day early for prayer meeting and so forth, but you cannot divorce this from what was the political reality of the time, Reverbo. I don't know if you saw this thing, but this was sent along to me over the course of the weekend. It turns out that George Bush, in like 2003, 2004, 2005, it was when he was trying to pitch the Iraq War and trying to get membership in the Coalition of the Billing, or Willing, that is. he got to make his sales pitch to French President Jacques Chirac.
All right.
Okay. Sitting down?
Yeah.
Ever read Hal Lindsey? Late Great Planet Earth? 1980s Countdown to Armageddon? All those greats?
Probably missed it.
Well, Hal Lindsey turned a particularly psychotic reading of an already psychotic biblical book, namely the Book of Revelation, into a cottage industry and made himself a millionaire out of it with this book that came out in the early 70s called The Late Great Planet Earth. And in it, he talks about how our moral decay, everything that you've heard, I mean, it's all in there. Okay?
We're back to sanctimonious again here.
Right. And see, we are facing the Jesus is coming. He's coming soon, and we're going to have us a war with the Soviet Union.
Oh my!
Because you see, in the Book of Revelation, it talks about Gog and Magog. And you see, in the Book of Revelation, and I'm doing the little redneck thing. But the fact of the matter is, he shows up on the PTL club and he's got this little, porn mustache going on, and he looks like, and he talks like a scholar.
Yeah.
He doesn't scream and carry on like me. He's totally respectable. That's the way they are, at least on the surface. And well,
you see what's going to happen, Jim. Tammy. What's going to happen right after you're done singing, Tammy, is, you got to understand that the Book of Revelation uses coded language, and there was no USSR back then, so they refer to geographic regions. And when the Book of Revelation refers to Gog, what he means is the Soviet Union. And when he refers to Magog, what he means is Moscow. Gog and Magog? I mean, I don't even think those were places then. The Book of Revelation is the absolute psychotic ravings of a man who spent most of his time talking to his toenail clippings. He was so nuts, he was exiled to the island of Patmos. He didn't go willingly. You know, there was enough planet back then that when you had a guy who was absolutely just batshit crazy, you could say, tell you what, we're not going to cut your head off or crucify you or anything. We're just going to stick you out on a rock and let you tell it to the seagulls. And that was Patmos. And so there's all this Gog and Magog business. And Hal Lindsey is absolutely up to his chin in Gog and Magog. And see, when it turned out that the Soviet Union collapsed instead of attacking Israel and starting Armageddon, he just retooled it all and repackaged it and resold it. You know, it's kind of like...
Let me guess.
It's kind of like a New Kids on the Block album. You know, you just get some new kids every now and then. And, you know...
No, it's kind of like this, like you talked about earlier in the evening. It's just part of the sky is falling... mentality of the right wing. It's just if you lose a couple of bullies over here, a bunch of terrorists over here, but that's okay. We'll invent some more over here. This isn't a problem.
Yeah, and see, so what happens is back in here it is. I've been looking for the story. Yeah, our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent this along, and it's a real hair yanker, and it fits in with tonight. It would fit in with tomorrow night, too, but it's particularly good tonight.
Yep.
In 2003, while lobbying leaders to put together the coalition of the willing, President Bush spoke to France's President Jacques Chirac. And this is, you can find this over at alternet.org. Shocking biblical prophecy emerges. Okay. That's, it's from Clive Anderson at Counterpunch. He says, Bush wove a story about how the biblical creatures Gog and Magog were at work in the Middle East and how they must be defeated. Oh, I'm sorry, I was all bass-ackwards. In Genesis and Ezekiel, Gog and Magog are forces of the apocalypse who are prophesied to come out of the north and destroy Israel unless stopped. And then Revelation picks it up. And here's the Bible quote. And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, and fire and came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. I think Gog and Magog are like, you know, the speaking in tongues. Gog and Magog, I don't know. Bush believed the time had now come for that battle, telling Chirac, and here's the quote. Now, remember this, Reverbo, we have to take all this in context. Because this is the same guy who stood in Jerusalem and said, and looked at the Prime Minister of Israel, the eyeball to eyeball, and said, God told me to attack Saddam, and I did. Whew, mother.
Whoa.
Well, apparently in 2003, at the same time thereabouts, he's looking at the President of France. I mean, and again, you know, this isn't Tony Blair, you know, the little poodle. This isn't his little right-wing pal Silvio Berlusconi or that guy in Spain who was his right-wing buddy at the time. This is the President of France. This is quite possibly one of the most worldly men on earth. And he looks at the President of France, Reverbo, and he says, this confrontation is willed by God.
who wants to use this conflict to erase his people's enemies before a new age begins.
Huh? A president of my country uttered that?
Yeah. Really, really. And then this little snippet. The story of the conversation emerged only because the Elysee Palace, baffled by Bush's words, sought advice from Thomas Romer, a professor of theology at the University of Lausanne. 4 years later, Romer gave an account in the September 2007 issue of the university's review, A Les Savoir. The article apparently went unnoticed, although it was referred to in a French newspaper. The story, for all the deniers out there, this is the important part. The story has now been confirmed by Jacques Chirac himself in a new book published in France in March by journalist Jean-Claude Maurice. Chirac is said to have been stupefied and disturbed by Bush's invocation of biblical prophecy to justify the war in Iraq and, quote, wondered how someone could be so superficial and fanatical in their beliefs. I mean, God almighty, in context, again, in context, Reverbo, you can almost understand saying it in Jerusalem. That's the home to all that lunacy. They got that Notre Dameist man in France, and it's the same thing.
We were baffled by the American president. Oh, yeah, you think so? I can't. There's people that really do want a Christian theocracy in this country, and unfortunately, I don't know, what are we, 85% Christian here, and everybody evidently was okay with this guy. But this is lunacy beyond. This is equal to like the Khomeini and people like this. This is on that level.
Yeah, yeah. There's not a dime's worth of difference between a fundamentalist Muslim and a fundamentalist Christian.
Okay.
And it's made me so it is so thoroughly screwed with my world, Reverbo, that it intrudes into my world. I was sitting in traffic at a light the other day, behind some gas guzzling SUV with a great big sticker that said, "This is a Christian nation."
Oh, brother.
So we're in a left turn lane, and it's one of those two lane affairs. And so I made sure I got it next to her, and I had the window rolled down. No, it's not! No, it's not! They're going to come haul me away someday.
What did the guy do? Did he look over you, stare?
Yeah, well, her window wasn't down.
Oh.
And, she's naturally looking around. Is there a flat? Do I have a flat? No, it's not a Christian nation!
Oh God! Yeah, we're gonna, she's probably got that air conditioning compressor on in that baby. The compressors in those things could power a small city, so she's probably got that thing cranked.
Yeah, and Time Life presents Love Rock, Faith Rock. Time Life proudly presents Faith Rock, the best of modern contemporary Christian music.
Oh, there's nothing like Christian rock and roll, man.
I gotta agree with you. There's really nothing like it.
There really isn't. Oh God. Yeah, I just, have you forgotten about Jesus? Isn't it time you did? I mean, this is unbelievable. You know, here's another deal that we've been circling around all evening, is that this whole idea that, in certain people, certain countries, certain religions, do evil, it's for a good reason, Bob. It's for a justifiable reason. But of course, when other people do it, it's just
evil.
Aggressive. It must be challenged and avenged. Somehow or other, when we torture, it must be for a good reason.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't do it otherwise because we're good.
Well, we're good. We're proud to be Americans, and we must have a proud reason to do it. The whole thing is just.
Well, we're proud to be Americans, where at least we know we're free.
Right. Okay. See, it's so easy to lose me with these things. I never.
No, it's just Lee Greenwood, man. I mean, it's burned into people's skulls, and
it's a shame. It's such a damn shame.
And I have. I have no viable answer for it.
I don't know. Quit smoking cigarettes in the parking lot and get back in the civics class.
If there was a civics class, Reverbo.
Yeah, I was afraid you'd observe that. Well, we have to hope that Obama gets civics classes back on the.
But that's. I guess this is why it's so hard for Democrats to lead and hold power. Because, you know, it's not the corporatists who are out there doing the corporate bidding and the Ben Nelsons out there trying to do their best Republican impressions. They're not the problem. You and me, the Horn family, we're the problem, River. Because we don't understand that you have to compromise every last one of your values in order to have political power. We just don't understand that. We don't understand that, you know, once you come into power, you have to take somebody else's failed war, and instead of ending it right away because it was a terrible mistake, end it somewhere in the distant future. You know, I saw Bart Kopp. He had a query at his page that I saw today. In regard to Afghanistan, how many years is it going to take us to go cave to cave in Afghanistan and sort out the good guys from the bad guys when we can't even tell which are which?
Cave to cave.
Cave to cave salesman.
Why do we have to? He has to somehow embrace it. He has to somehow own it, and then that's how he can end it. So he can. And in the meantime, you know, how many people died today?
Yeah, because see, the thing is, when you walk in the door and you get your first briefing, and I mean, you got to give the guy a chance to get his feet on the ground, get his feet wet. After you've been told, then you come out and you say, you know, this is a complete, total disaster. I mean, this is a screw-up of monumental proportions. We have no business there, and we're leaving. And if you do that then, yes, the right wings are going to hop up and down, and the security moms are going to scream, but what if I'm bombed at the Walmart? But that's where leadership comes in, and we say, you know, ma'am, we're not going to let you get bombed at the Walmart. We'll let you go and buy your beer at the Walmart and get bombed at home. No, I'm sorry.
Email's coming soon.
Okay, I know. I'm trying to break myself of it, but it's you have no idea what a challenge.
Don't worry. She'll be able to go to Walmart.
But that's leadership. That's presidential.
Yeah.
This country will remain secure, and we will protect the nation. But, you know, not by continuing to bankrupt the country on a really stupid war where we have to wind up going cave to cave.
Right. Well, we can do that.
I guess what I was going to say, Reverbo, is that you can do that early on. And I guess we're still early in the presidency. But you can't say, I've had a look at Afghanistan, and now we're getting out. Because then you're the guy, 2 years in, who screwed up Afghanistan. You've taken ownership of it.
Yeah, he doesn't have much time here. I'm still waiting for that point in time you were just referring to actually come to fruition here, where we are at that time. Because, get at these foreign entanglements. There's nothing, they only lead to a bad place. We got to get out of there.
There's no good that comes of it.
No, not a damn thing, especially over there. I mean, you start thinking about Vietnam and how, you know, the sky was falling there, and we got the domino effect. And, well, Jesus, you know, Vietnam falls, the next step is Australia, and after that, Cleveland. I mean,
the funny thing was, Vietnam was over, and we fell for it again from Ronnie Reagan.
The Sandinistas are in Nicaragua, and the next thing you know, they're going to be in Dallas, and what'll we do without football?
There you go.
And the American people went, really, yeah, there's sand in it. I can't say it, but it sounds scary.
They tied it in to the big, the scary Soviet bear. They tied it in to the mushroom cloud, just like that George Jr. did. They keep tying it into the mushroom cloud. And I'll tell you what I thought about this last week or something, and I can't, of course, prove this, but I'll bet I'm right. You know damn well they knew there were no weapons of mass destruction over there. You know why? Because if you're going to go in there and upset the hornet's nest, you don't want to upset the hornets who have A-bombs. Of course they knew there was nothing over there.
Well, right. I mean, you know, I was making the argument, yeah, right. If this guy really has everything you say he has, then the only way he's ever going to use it is if you corner him. Cornered rats are the rats that bite.
Of course he had nothing. No one's going to... Everybody knew what was liable to happen over there. Yeah, I mean, they knew they didn't... You know, he had nothing. This thing was bogus from the get-go. But you see, they keep somehow or other... I don't know how to break this to people, but the modern arms race... Folks, that horse is out of the barn. He's never going back in.
No, and barn's been burnt. Ain't no barn to go back to.
North Korea is going to eventually get a bigger bottle rocket, and Iran is eventually going to get an atomic device, and there's nothing we can do about it.
But you do, but the thing is, there's nothing we can do about it, but if you want to deal with that day when that day comes, then you'd better start asking the critical question, why do they want them?
Well, I got an answer for that, because... countries like the United States, and I hate to just pick on the U.S., but it's such an easy example, we haven't stopped selling everybody and their Aunt Louise jet fighters in service to air missiles.
Well, not just that. We also, we did sort of set a little precedent in August of 1945 that we are willing to drop nuclear devices on people who don't look like us.
Yeah, I guess there's that, too.
You know,
but in the meantime, we just ramp up. I mean, look at all the industrialized countries that ramp up the arms race every month. What is it? Arms and drugs are the largest piece of the world pie, the world GNP pie, are arms and drugs. I don't see that. I don't notice that's coming to an end anytime soon. I mean, I'm glad Obama's talking about trying to get rid of nukes, but, man, I think the chance of that happening is like zero.
But see, you know, what you're talking about with the nuclear arms stuff, Reverbo, is third rail stuff. And wow, we're running out of time. Unless we come to the grips with the fact that Iran lives in a place where there are scary people who have nukes and they don't, namely the Pakistanis, the Indians, and the Israelis. If you live there, you want them too. Because it's the only thing that holds off the people who have them. You know, mutual assured destruction, MAD, as a deterrent policy, was a really good idea, so it's said, between the United States and the Soviet Union. But the same thing somehow doesn't work if you are Iran and you're surrounded by Israel, Pakistan, and India? And Saudi Arabia hates your guts and they're our best friends, as is Israel?
Oh, you can identify with their thinking easily.
You know, I mean, you don't have to identify. All you got to do is be, rational enough to understand that people think that way. Anybody who's ever seen one guy go out and buy a new car and his next-door neighbor buy one 2 days later, and that's just buying a new car. But there you go. Reverbo, this has been fun, but I got to hit it, brother.
All right, man. I'll talk to you down the road. Make it personal, my friend.
Going to keep it that way. Later, Reverbo.
All right.
Bye now. Critic at Large, Reverbo. Wow, where'd that show go? What a great way to come back from the long weekend. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Your emails, your calls. Thank you for keeping the horn going. A couple of you, several of you, stepped up in ways that I could not begin to comprehend and saved us for another month. We'll be here June. We got all the plans in the world of being here July. Because of you. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, and Ben Birch. Thanks to our chat room moderators. web managers, Lottie, ELO. Thank you. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene, Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch. If you were listening to the beginning of the program, you understand why these folks who take these steps in the face of such profound risk, why I say that they are the bravest, hardest working people I know. We'll be back tomorrow evening for prayer meeting. I hope you will join us then as well. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.